Hi, this is Rick Emerson, and the following encore of the Rick Emerson Show is brought to you by Squires Electric. Whether it's electrical wiring, Ethernet wiring, or wiring of any kind at all in your home or business, Squires Electric can make your life easier. Find out more at squireselectric.com or call 503-252-1609. Squires Electric.
Robert Benitez, New York. You study Shakespeare?
Drill Sergeant, yes, Drill Sergeant.
All right, let me hear some.
Go!
I said I want to hear some. Let's go. Come on, what was that? I can't hear. Come on, go!
He that outlives this day and comes safe home will stand a tiptoe when this day is named and rouse him at the name of Crispian.
I didn't tell you to stop. Keep going, keep going.
He that shall live this day and see old age will yearly on the vigil feast his neighbors and say, tomorrow is St. Crispian. Then will he strip his sleeves, show his scars, and say, these wounds I had on St. Crispian's day. Old men forget, yet all shall be forgot. But he'll remember with advantages what feats he did that day. Then shall our names, familiar in his mouth as household words, Harry the King, Bedford and Exeter, Warwick and Talbot, Salisbury and Gloucester, be in their flowing cups freshly remembered. And this story shall the good man teach his son, and Crispian Crispian shall ne'er go by from this day to the ending of the world, for we in it shall be remembered. We few, we happy few, we band of brothers. For he today that sheds his blood with me shall be my brother. The gentlemen in England now abed shall think themselves accursed they were not here, and hold their manhoods cheap whilst any speaks who fought with us upon St. Crispian's Day.
Minutes after the hour of one, and this is the month of May in the year of our Lord 2011. That was just the sound of me putting my hand into my microphone right now, because I'm a broadcast professional, trained to practice for many years. Hello to you. It is Monday. It is Memorial Day. It is May 30th, 2011. Thank you for drawing near that ye might be amused and entertained on this day of memoriam. It is Monday, and welcome to Day 12. We are live here at the plushly appointed yet not overly ostentatious studios of the Emerson News Network, looming high over the milk packing district here in glorious Southeast Portland, Oregon. Thank you for joining us. 503-505-6964. 503-505-6964. By the way, speaking of milk and the packing of same, so during the musical interlude just now, we were playing a little tune by Mr. Lou Reed, which resulted in Seamus saying, "That song is going to be stuck in my head all day now, you bastards. F you." And then I typed back, "Which song are you referring to? Are you referring to the song Egg Cream by Lou Reed?" And he said, "Yes, it is." And then added really strangely, "Although it did get the Rebecca Black out of my head," which is odd because we weren't playing that, which means that it was just sort of, and I can imagine that he's like, I can't imagine that he's just voluntarily listening to it or putting himself willingly in a situation where it's going to be in his brain. Or that he like wades hip deep into entertainment that's filled with a lot of Rebecca Black as the soundtrack, which means it's just sort of circulating around inside his head all the time. But then he just says, I don't even know what an egg cream is, but now I want some. All right, well, there you go. A little hint, no eggs, no cream. I guess it's not a hint so much as it is just an observation.
It's a fizzy chocolate milk, basically.
It is chocolate syrup, soda water, and milk. And if you ask David Mamet, it has a secret ingredient in it as well, which is the thing I think invented in Brooklyn, but found mostly in the East Coast, which they've tried to bottle. I think that's what Yoo-hoo is supposed to be, except it's not carbonated.
Yeah.
Because I think that Yoo-hoo is an attempt. I mean, Yoo-hoo isn't just chocolate, because it's not chocolate milk. There's no milk in Yoo-hoo, I don't think. I think that's the difference between like Yoo-hoo and like your quick chocolate milk or your regular actual. I think that's what makes Yoo-hoo different from chocolate milk. I think Yoo-hoo is actually just water and chocolate powder and perhaps powdered milk.
Maybe.
Now I don't even know the difference. But I think there's no milk actually. So it's, I guess that's maybe not even an egg cream, because an egg cream is milk. An egg cream is milk and water and chocolate. But the water is sort of, it's carbonated. It's got like a seltzer in it.
Yeah.
So I think Yoo-hoo is I think Yoo-hoo is a non-dairy chocolate milk, which makes it a different product altogether. Well, now I don't know. In any event, so there you go. That is from the almost wholly terrible album, Set the Twilight Reeling, which does have a couple of standout tracks, including that. So do try to catch it, won't you? It's 503-505-6964. By the way, can I just tell you this? The day that I actually got an egg cream in Brooklyn was one of the highlights. It was one of those things. It was checking things off simultaneous lists. I mean, it was like you're removing something. You're getting something done on like a culinary list, you know, where it's like a thing you've always wanted to try, or a thing you've had it, you've never really had it, like in the cradle of its birth. It's like you go to different parts of the country, different parts of the world, and then you have a thing, you know, that was created there, or a thing that they are generally accepted to make better than most other, you know, places or people, depending on where you are. And then you're also checking something off a pop culture list. And then it's like you're fantasizing that you're, it's waiting for a gig as part of Murder Incorporated, if you're me. So it was like three or four different things at once. I didn't remember the name of the place. It was someplace in Brooklyn.
I've only ever had an egg cream in Los Angeles, which isn't really quite the same thing. And I remember being very disappointed in it because I was a teenager at the time. And I'd always wanted to try an egg cream because one of my favorite books, Harriet the Spy, and Harriet would always stop and get egg creams. And then I had to find out what an egg cream was, and it just never quite lived up to my imaginings.
No, it's like a fizzy chocolate milk. Although, yeah. I mean, and I'm not this guy because I'm obviously not from New York. Now, if I was from New York, I wouldn't probably have made it past the point where you said I got one in Los Angeles.
Yeah.
Because then I would have just arched an eyebrow and snorted derisively and then, you know, gone back about my business. But also, it is, here's the thing about the egg cream as I understand it, and I'm certainly not an expert, but I do believe it's all in the preparation. Because I think it's all, that's why the bottled egg cream never works, because it's all about the head of it. It's the foam.
It's a soda fountain thing that you get.
Which is,
also has to be seltzer and not like, say, club soda.
That's the thing. Right. It's like, you can't just be like sticking some CO2 in there and have it work. It's all about the preparation of it. So forth. It's the Rick Emerson Radio Program. It is Monday, May 30th, 2011. It is Memorial Day. We are here alive. Thank you to everybody who heard us on Legion of News last hour. Let's see. Coming up today in the program, we got your Penis Watch, Religious Nutcase Watch. Mr. Aaron Duran going to be joining us with The Week in Geek coming up around 25 minutes for now. I asked him just to push it back a little bit because he's always calling at 1:50, and then it's like he just sits on hold for like 12 minutes, while we just sort of nattering on about whatever. So, you know, so today we'll probably just finish up, you know, like 30 seconds of nothing to say, and then just sit around and stare at each other and just, you know, breathe in and out waiting for him to call. But that's going to be 2 o'clock, The Week in Geek, which
Do you really think that's likely?
No.
Really?
Also, though, I can't remember, I swear to Christ, I can't remember anything about today's Week in Geek except that he said there wasn't anything going on. Oh, no, there's news about Zod.
Oh. Zod news.
Possibly.
No.
Or Zog. No, that's the guy that makes the surf wax, right?
Yes, and also, isn't that like the? Am I thinking of the secret Jewish organization? Is that Zog?
Oh, it's secret now, is it?
Zion.
Yes, the Zionist.
occupational government or something like that.
Something like that, yeah. I guess. Which is weird because it's like, because I first heard that when I was, I read this book years ago by Stephen Singular called Talk to Death, which is a great book, which is the, it's about the life and murder of Alan Berg, who was that Jewish talk show host in Denver. They got gunned down by some morons from not too far from my hometown. The idiots from Medellin Falls, where they all come from. These jagoffs from Washington that drove down to Denver to make a statement by killing a guy who was armed with a lit cigarette, because that's really how you establish your manhood. Anyway, but they were always going on and on about the Zionist occupied government, I believe. And at the time, though, when I was reading the book, like, I just picked it up because I was just starting to make plans to get into radio. I'd loved radio, and I was starting to sort of lay the groundwork to get a radio gig. And so I just happened to pick it up at this bookstore near my house, like from the true crime section, I think, of all places, I guess because it's about the manhunt for the guys. Anyway, so I pick it up, and I'm just thinking it's about a radio guy. And then later they're talking about the Zog thing, and all I knew about Zog was that there was this, like, surf wax company called Mr. Zog's, which always seemed a little titillating because they called it sex wax. Yeah. For reasons that I don't even now understand. What is that about? You're from Southern California. Please to explain.
I don't know. Just a marketing thing, I guess. I don't know.
But that doesn't even make sense. I mean, I'm not saying it doesn't have it. Its upside is as a marketing tool because you put the word sex there and it gets attention. But I mean, it just seems illogical. You can't put it on your penis. I mean, I guess you shouldn't probably.
I don't know. I hung out with surfers, but I was not a surfer myself. I know that the sex wax was very popular. It was a preferred brand for waxing one's board.
But is that what it is? Is it all about just talking about if you're going to be waxing your board?
Maybe. I don't know. I honestly have no idea.
Is it really just like some hang ted version of like a Big Johnson t-shirt?
Kind of. Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
I was going to say a hodad version, but of course it would not be a hodad version.
No.
It would
be
You don't want to be a hodad.
A kahuna version.
Yes.
For example.
All right. Hey, speaking of kahunas and people from Hawaii, so the weirdest thing happened. I feel bad, actually. I feel bad. Now we're just so totally off the point. Well, let me just stop for a second.
Was there a point? Was there ever a point?
Well, I was talking about St. Crispin's Day. I guess not. I was talking about egg cream.
Egg cream and then Zog and then sex wax.
Okay, but remind me to talk about Hawaiians here in a second, and then I'll feel guilt about, okay. Hawaiians. All right, so Penis Watch coming up today. Religious Nutcase Watch. Week in Geek with Mr. Aaron Duran. We'll recap last night's episode of The Killing, which was exceptional.
Jesus.
What a stressful show that is.
That show is killing me.
Seriously, it's giving me like agita and high blood pressure and all kinds of things.
And I've also reached that point now when they reach the end of every episode, I just go, no!
Come on!
You can't stop now!
I know, that's from episode one I've been saying that it's like they do the cliffhanger really, really well because it doesn't feel cheap.
At this point, if you haven't been watching The Killing, just wait for the DVD set to come out and just like set yourself aside a weekend. And because once you start watching it, you're just not going to want to stop.
Why had somebody told me, like, well, I don't know, maybe I'll start watching this week. You can't start watching that. You got to watch from the beginning. Like, you can't really, more than any show I've seen in a long time, probably since The Wire, you can't pick up like halfway through. That's just not, if you try to watch like on episode five, this is not going to work, friend.
Yeah, Patrick hasn't been watching it, and he asked me this morning.
How is that possible? What are you doing over there at your house? Are you falling down on the job?
He goes to work on Monday mornings, and I watch The Killing. And before I come to work.
He can watch it Monday, though.
Yeah, but then I say, you want to watch The Killing? And he just kind of gets this he kind of frowns a little bit and just goes, because he knows it's like really relentlessly grim.
Wow.
And so the idea of just sitting down and watching it to catch up, he just goes, oh, well, yeah.
That's a fair point.
Just hold on to it and we'll do it later. Well, yeah, so we haven't done it yet.
All right.
So this morning, though, he was home from work and he's kind of going, so what's going on? Because the last thing I heard was like they just like had the girl in the basement. And I'm like, I don't have time, honey.
Yeah,
I do not have time to tell you all the things that have happened. I can't catch you up on this.
No, there's just no way. So that's like, that is my thing with Lars. I'm just like, either watch it yourself or go to Wikipedia because I don't have the time or the mental candle power really to be doing this. So now we've only got 11, we got 3 episodes left, if it is indeed a 13 episode run, which I think it is. So last night was episode 10, and it was awesome, by the way. And I know I say that every week.
And it's looking like I may have been wrong on my prediction of who the murderer was,
I thought he was a little too obvious. I mean, I'm not saying that, he could still be the guy. I mean, it could turn out that it was like some weird conspiracy and he was part of it, or he was an accomplice somehow, or he covered something up. But he just seemed too overtly crazy is the thing. Belko.
But he was so under the radar for the first, like, say, 8 or 9 episodes.
Well,
so,
maybe, except they had him, like, hiding the kids, like, stained, like, bedwetting clothes. Yeah. You know, and plus he's just so shifty and weaselly and wormy. Yeah. You know, plus four episodes from the, I get that was the other thing too, is like last week when they're getting their beat on with that guy, there was like four episodes from the end, and I thought, well, they can't tip the hand now unless the last two episodes are like a trial or something. There's just like no way.
Well, let's save all of this for our discussion.
Good point. All right, so we'll talk about the killing. Let's see. We have a Penis Watch, Religious Nutcase Watch, Aaron Duran, and then Don Taylor tracking the following headlines for you on this Monday.
Well, we have a court case in California regarding Twitter that could have repercussions for freedom of speech around the world. We have a Memorial Day concert hosted by Joe Mantegna. And in Sweden, swine flu vaccinations are causing narcolepsy.
Really?
Yes.
Are you sure that's just because the sun never goes down there?
That could be.
You know, that seems like that might contribute to it. Yeah. All right. And remember, so the swine flu... Here's the thing about the swine flu. I know there were the people who got sick, and like our friend David Walker was very, you know, he was very under the weather and with it, but they didn't... That wasn't like some big death march across the country the way they were saying it was going to. And I don't think it's because of the vaccine, because like I never got that.
No, it was a bad flu, but we get a number of different strains of bad flus through, you know, pretty much every year. And there was a specific vaccination for it. But I mean, every few years we get a new specific strain of flu, and they are almost all like super dangerous for like elderly people and weak people and people with
no, but what systems. Isn't honestly,
you know, it was a really bad flu. I think just because, you know, it had like a name like swine flu, it's the media just really
well,
you know,
and plus didn't it kill like 20 million people the last time, like in 1918 or something
like that? Yeah, but
but
you
also
know,
1918, you're basically just living in a pile of feces.
Yeah, people,
at home anyway.
You
so.
Could die from a hangnail in 1918.
Yeah, so yeah. All right. Well, I'm glad I didn't get all bent out of shape about it and all amped up. And again,
I mean, it was a really bad flu. That we, you know, some of the people we knew who had it, like Kristen Bowie had it, and David Walker. I mean, they got really sick. But you know, it's the flu. It's just another kind of flu.
They're sort of the you know what they are? They're like chaff. They're like a magnet. They're like one of those, you know, they're like one of those things that Airwolf would launch whenever there was a heat-seeking missile after it. And they would launch a sort of, it was like a flare kind of a thing, and that would draw the heat-seeking missile away. They would have, and Stringfellow would have Dominic launch the flare, and then that would draw the missile away from Airwolf itself.
Oh, see, I was thinking more like they were the open box of baking soda in the refrigerator, absorbing all of the bad things into it, so the rest of us don't have to deal with it.
No, there's also that. All right, so this is all true. It's 503-505-6964. If you would like to join us on this Memorial Day, is 503-505-6964. We want to welcome a brand new listener, Jeremy, joining us today in the Rick Emerson Show. So hello and howdy to you, and congratulations on making a shrewd choice. Sir, you've taken your first step into a larger world. You can also email if you like. It's rick@rickemerson.com. That is rick@rickemerson.com or Dawn, D-A-W-N, @rickemerson.com. By the way, I get a little thrill of happiness and pride whenever I see an email come by that is addressed to Rick and then Show Pony. Because some people have actually modified their address book so that it's listed now.
Oh,
you
nice.
Are now listed under that name. Oh. I think our friend Todd the Corpse did that, actually. He sent an email over the weekend that I think you were CC'd on, and it was to Rick and Show Pony.
Yes. And he also created a Show Pony logo for
really?
T-shirts. Didn't you see that?
No, I haven't seen that.
I'll pull that up for you.
How is it that I wasn't made aware of that? Nobody shows me anything. I'm so out of the loop. Never, I'm not invited to any of the meetings, memos.
You need to read the Facebook and not just post the Facebook. You need to show interest in others.
Oh, it was on Facebook. Well, was I tagged in it or something? Wouldn't it have shown up on my own page then?
Show Pony.
Eh.
That was Rick Emerson in your logo, Todd.
Yeah, I don't really know that I missed much there.
I like one that says Rick Emerson and Show.
Yeah,
kind of like that that Barksdale and
Bell
and Bell logo that Cheryl's did.
Because that looks like he just chiseled it off the side of like a country club somewhere, you know, or like I don't know, like one of those weird trailers that guys are always dragging behind their truck, you know, where there's like a horse and something. It looks like he just shoplifted that from like a stable company or something. No offense. Anyway, well, I'll read this email from Todd here in just a few. Anyway, you can email if you like, though. It's rick@rickemerson.com or Dawn, D-A-W-N, rickemerson.com. Text box on the website, and then Skype as well. That is Rick Emerson Show. That is all one word. Rick Emerson Show via Skype. Well, I'll talk about this thing with Hawaiians here in a second. But let me, you know, we've got, you know, what Seamus says. He says, my parents' financial advisor is Joe Mantegna's brother. How awesome is that?
I went to culinary school with Joe Mantegna's nephew, I think it was. it was like a, and he lives around, he lives actually around here somewhere, and I think he is a, and I think he's also like in some, he went into like some kind of financial thing or something.
A cheerful fecundity in that family. They're just everywhere.
Yeah, I remember I was in, I was in culinary school with this guy, and I went for several weeks and held back because we all wore name tags. So anyway,
did he like, look like a Mantegna?
He did.
Oh, it had his name that would actually
and
said.
And it had his name on the tag, and he had like dark hair and these dark eyebrows. He's like, and I just, and finally I was just, was working with him on the line one day, and I just said, so you related to Joe Mantegna? He said, yeah. Yeah, he's my uncle. I was like, oh,
that's
cool.
Awesome. Excellent. That's fantastic. All right. I dig that guy. I'm a huge Joe Mantegna fan. Even, you know, and it, and the thing is, you don't hear, maybe hear more people say that now, because I feel like he's achieved some sort of a critical mass, you know, like with The Simpsons, you know, and then, but he's never really had like a big breakout role, has he?
Not really, no.
Biggest just... role Joe Mantegna's had, other than The Simpsons.
Well,
which almost doesn't count because it's animated.
Oh, Criminal Minds. Can't see him. Being one of the stars of Criminal
Minds. Is he on
Criminal
Minds?
Yeah,
I don't know. I've never watched that
Minds
show.
For years.
Oh, see, I didn't know that.
Is he? And I'm trying to remember if he's still on it because I go back. I always think Criminal Minds, Mandy Patinkin, and honest to God, Joe Mantegna replaced Mandy Patinkin like 5 years ago. But I always think that it's Mandy Patinkin.
Yeah, see, and so I've never really watched that show. So that's the thing. Yeah. See, I'm totally oblivious to that.
No, yeah. No, he's a star of Criminal Minds.
Okay, see, because like when I think of, like, I think of, like, I just go right to, I go right to like Searching for Bobby Fischer, and then what else? There's Searching for Bobby Fischer. There's he's in the Rat Pack movie where he plays Dean Martin, and is awesome. By the way,
I saw him in a play in Los Angeles, but of course I didn't know it at the time because he wasn't, you know, Joe Mantegna yet.
Right.
It was before he'd actually even started making movies or doing stuff. And I was reading a bio of him once, and they said that he had done the show Bleacher Bums, which is about a bunch of people in the stands at a Chicago Cubs game. And he said that he'd done the run in Los Angeles. And I said, I went to see that. And then I went and looked up the cast information. It's like, sure enough, he was in it. And I saw it. And I was like, hey, apparently I saw Joe Mantegna in a play once. But, you know,
I think he was in. I think he was part of the original cast of Sexual Perversity in Chicago. And then I want to say that he was in American Buffalo, but I could be wrong about that. It, to me, he just seems like a guy who's always in David Mamet stuff. But the thing is, I don't know if he's ever really been in any David Mamet stuff.
Yeah, he just seems like he should.
He just seems like one of those guys that ought to be. Have you seen the Rat Pack movie?
Yes.
With Ray Liotta? That's fantastic.
Yeah, it's really good.
He nails it. I'm a huge fan of that
guy. I went into that cringingly, expecting it not to be very good.
Oh, no,
and it turned
out
it was awesome.
No, yeah. It's the only bad thing about the Rat Pack movie is that it ends. It's like you just want it to keep going. Because it ends right as he's like sending Peter Lawford packing. You know, why is he staying at Bing's house? You know, it just kicks him out. And then you're like, I wanted it to be a miniseries. I wanted it to just go on and on and on and never ever be over. All right. Somebody says, Joe Mantegna. Wasn't he in the film where Christopher Reeve was in a wheelchair? Not the one where Christopher Reeve was a gay playwright, but the other one. What's where he was a gay playwright? You're talking about Death Trap?
Yeah.
No, he wasn't in a wheelchair in Death Trap, though. That was where he was just humping it out with Michael Caine. I mean, it was implied. I don't think he ever really... And then what was it? Was it in The Gloaming? Was that the one where he was in the wheelchair? Or was he directing that?
I don't know.
I can't really pretend to be like... here's the thing. I'm not going to pretend to be that knowledgeable about stuff that Christopher Reeve did. It was not Death Trap or Superman.
And now we're talking about Superman. That brings us all the way back around to Zod.
Oh, God. So confusing. All right.
We've now come full circle.
Well, in any event. Yes, all of that stuff. So forth. If you'd like to contact us, you can do it with any of those mechanisms. I'll just read this quick thing from Todd, because I said I was going to. Blah, 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 Neil before Todd. Subject line, clutch. Rick, I spent about 4 hours surrounded by lesbians this afternoon. This is yesterday. Lesbians this afternoon. It's a long story involving prison workers, a hippie mother who dressed her boy quite literally like a little girl down to his styled long flowing hair, a lesbian sword-fighting minister... I think lesbians wouldn't do a lot of sword fighting. And me, the lone male, all at a 4-year-old's birthday party. I have decided the great term for an assembled group of gay females would be a clutch of lesbians. I now give that to your audience to spread around for me. It was actually quite a perfect Portland afternoon. It was the clutch of lesbians, many of them married, gasp, he says, with their own children, double gasp. One of them a minister, and then he puts egads, with 4 exclamation marks, and all of them drinking, and then me, the lone male, who was there, working as a nanny. I am awesome. I also learned that when you are the lone male surrounded by militant lesbians who are trying to assemble a bike given to the birthday child, the exact wrong joke to make is, quote, maybe you should get yourself a man to do that, end quote. especially when you don't know 95% of the women there. Oops. Clutch of lesbians. No. Snyder already gave us Munch of Lesbians, though.
That's right.
But I forget what the gay male version of that was. It was a something of gays and a munch of lesbians.
A flutter of gays.
Was it a swell of gays or a... Should be a swell of gays.
Yeah.
A fab of gays.
I don't have my phone, or else I would text him and ask.
It was something or other, but it was a something of gays and a munch of lesbians. But you know, Clutch. You know, Clutch is all right. There should be a clutch of camels.
Yeah.
Anyway, all right. So there's that, and then I meant to ask you about this. So there's two. You put two things on Twitter this weekend, and I meant to ask you about both of them. One is, you said at one point. And I was going to type a correction to you. I was going to correct you over Twitter. Like, I was going to at you know, Don Taylor you and then say, no, what you really mean is... But then I thought that would, A, be rude, because then it's like correcting you in public. Mm. And also, I could have been wrong. I have no idea the context of your statement, but I immediately felt like you were probably wrong.
Okay.
You put this thing on Twitter where you remarked that you were at a party, and you said, I am currently at a party. I just referred to myself as the Richard Attenborough of penises.
Of wieners,
yes.
Wieners.
And so what does that mean?
Well, and I might have been wrong. Is Sir Richard Attenborough the Attenborough who was in Jurassic Park?
Yes.
Okay, then...
I was going to correct you and say you meant David Attenborough, but then I thought you might not.
No, I meant Richard Attenborough. I was at a party. Our pirate friend, Jamie Kirk, who I may have mentioned recently, Patrick runs across him. I don't know if I mentioned this in the air or not. Patrick runs across him in a work capacity, like now every single day. And so he was talking to him last week, and Jamie said, you should come to a party at our house, and then wrote an address on a Post-it note and gave it to him. So we went to this party, and then everyone looked surprised we were there, and I had to stand there and go, well, you invited us on a Post-it note. That's like a legally binding document.
Yes, it's true. You know.
So, and then they were nice enough to go, oh, no, we're happy you're here. I was like, good. So, but I was at this party, and at one point I was in the kitchen, and I was sitting at the table by where the food was, and I was talking to... Jesse Graff, who was Spock in the Trek in the Park, and our friend Cable Hashitani was there, of course, because he's always everywhere.
Lurking behind a potted plant, plotting evil.
A bunch of people, and for some reason, because I was sitting near this plate of grilled hot dogs, they started calling me the Wiener Keeper. First I was the Keeper of the Wieners, then they just started calling me the Wiener Keeper, and then something came up, and then it all gets a little fuzzy, something came up about Jurassic Park. And about, like, Sir Richard Attenborough's being the keeper of, you know, the dinosaurs or something like that at Jurassic Park. Which I can't, apparently there was some line in the movie about, I am just the keeper of all, or something like that. And so I said, yes, I am the Richard Attenborough of Wieners. And then as soon as that came out of my mouth, I realized that's something that I never thought I would ever say.
If you close your eyes, it's just like being at the Algonquin Round Table.
I know. Yes. Anyway. And then everyone found Jamie's collection of Nerf weapons and started throwing foam axes at each other and shooting you. And then there was a gun that had Nerf darts that have suction cups on them, and they were shooting it at the head of the guy who was wearing a cardboard 12-pack Pabst Blue Ribbon thing on his head with eye holes cut out. And they were shooting it at his head because it would stick to the thing, and then they were all giggling.
What night was this?
This was Saturday night.
Hard to believe it didn't go. It was the Richard Attenborough of Wieners.
Yes,
so I'm glad I didn't correct you.
Richard Attenborough of Wieners.
Okay. Well, I'm glad to hear you use that correctly. And then also, you put this thing about, I think this was maybe last night, two nights ago. I don't know. You said something about, I would be, and this is like, what's funny about this is that you wrote this under the assumption that this is a thing people were clamoring for. You said, I would be live tweeting my viewing of I Am Number 4, except it has wiped my brain clean, or words to that effect.
Yeah,
So what is, I don't even really know what that is. Is that like some superhero thing? It was like there and then gone, and I just missed it.
Well, I Am Number 4 is based on this young adult series, the Lorien trilogy or something, which was ghost written by James Frey, the
Million Little Pieces
guy.
The Million Little Pieces guy.
And he and a partner ghost wrote these kids' books.
That's right. I knew that because there was a thing about how he'd become like basically like a producer of novels as opposed to authoring them as such.
Yeah.
He was sort of the guy behind the guy.
Yeah. And so, and the movie, there were only really two reasons I wanted to watch the movie. And it was because it was directed by DJ Caruso, who directed Disturbia, which I really, really liked a lot. And he directed Eagle Eye, which... I didn't hate. Eli was not great, but it still was really interesting. But Disturbia is really, really terrific. And so I thought, you know, I'd like to see what he does with a mainstream product like this. And the answer is as much as he could. Because this whole thing, and I'm saying this as having not read the book, but it's very obviously just this cynical kind of, what can I, and I'm just going to say James Frey, what can I, James Frey, do to cash in on this Twilight thing?
Yes.
I know. I'll write some books about, well, I can't be a vampire because that would look like I'm ripping off Twilight. I know. He'll be an alien. He's like this alien guy who's here and he has to go to high school and he's living with like a dad who's not really his dad because his parents are dead. And he falls in love with a high school girl who's mortal. But, oh, God, they can't be together because he has to fulfill his destiny sure. as an alien guy. Because there's, like, this minute-long thing at the top that's like, I'm come from the planet Gobbledygook, and all of my alien guys that aren't dead are being killed off by one by one.
Is there a,
and I'm number four.
Is there a moment where he's outside with the female lead and he says, it's the bright one up there, and points to a star?
I have to admit, I didn't get all the way through the movie.
Okay.
They did the whole thing, and you know, and it's that whole thing again where you go, okay, you're on the run, you're hiding from the guys with the fins in their faces and the sharp pointy teeth who are come from their planet and are trying to kill you because you have like superpowers that you can
Why
blast
are you watching
lightning.
This? Oh, because of the Disturbia thing and you thought it might be
thing.
Good.
And yeah. right. because the watcher pseudo dad guy who's helping train him and protect him, Timothy Oliphant.
Okay.
So I figure, okay, those two reasons. Are, and Patrick was interested because if it's anything even remotely science fiction-y, Patrick wants to see it. So we're watching it and it's like, yeah, and they're running around, and he falls in love with, like, the cheerleader from Glee. And then he's trying to explain to Timothy Oliphant that he can't, like, get out her out of his mind. And Timothy Oliphant tries to explain that, you know, she's a girl, just leave her alone. We have to keep running from the aliens. And then Timothy Oliphant explains, well, yes, but the people of our planet love differently than the people here. We essentially love one person forever.
Always from behind.
So if she is that to you, that I'm just like going... And all I'm
I feel like I'm
is,
getting dumber just listening to your explanation.
And I'm thinking a lot of the same things I thought when I was watching Twilight. Just like, well, if you're hiding from people and you don't want to be discovered, why do you keep registering in high school?
Yeah.
Why do you keep going to public high schools?
Also, someone is asking if you were really just watching an episode of Roswell and didn't realize it.
Oh, well, it's for one thing, it's written by, I didn't realize this at the time, but the screenwriters were Alfred Graf and Miles Millar of Smallville.
Ah, well, that explains a lot.
So, yeah. Yes. So it's like Twilight and Smallville had a retarded baby, it would be I am number
the
four.
The thing about this is that, like, alien sex doesn't strike me as being hot the same way that vampire sex is. Like, I'm not really the Twilight demographic, but I can get why vampire sex is sort of hot, like if you're a chick, you know, or if you're you know, if you're a certain type of reader, I understand. Alien sex doesn't even seem off-putting, it just seems, it seems like it's sort of neither. It seems like you'd be indifferent to the idea of alien sex.
Well, also he has this thing that when he gets all angry and hepped up, his hands glow and then he shoots fireballs out of them. And so
that's interesting.
I'd be really worried about having sex with someone like that, because what if, like, say he had his hands on your boobs and then he got like way over the side, boom, and then they're just gone.
I was just
that would be horrible.
Fixating on the fact that they couldn't quite have him sparkle, so they just had one part of him actually become sort of luminescent.
Yeah.
Not all over.
No. Right. No, and so I didn't actually make it all the way through because, spoilers, lol, you know, the father figure must die so that the son can rise up, and you know, because we always do that now because Joseph Campbell said so. And so as soon as Timothy Oliphant died, I just went, okay.
I'm done.
I have no more reason. And I went off and let Patrick watch the rest of it, and I ran a hot bath and read a book.
Somebody is describing the film as I am number two.
Yeah, it was
awesome.
It was
excellent.
It was pretty dumb.
Yeah,
it was really,
really
terrible. Dumb.
Yeah, I'm gonna put that on my to-don't list. So,
yeah.
All right. It is the Rick Emerson Radio Program. Thank you for joining us. It is Monday, Memorial Day. We'll get to Mr. Aaron Duran here in just one second. He'll join us for the Week in Geek. Let's see, a couple of messages. Somebody just says, Rick, you've mentioned Twilight like 20 times in the past several days. You are the Twilight demographic, whether or not you admit it. That's a fair point.
Yeah, you do consume the product.
I've seen the first three movies, and I have in fact read the first book. So there you go. Touche, sir. I stand accused and convicted.
Now I'm going to get you my Team Show Pony shirt to wear. And,
somebody else, we should totally do that.
Team Rick, Team Show Pony.
Somebody says, Kevin says, thanks for doing a new show on Memorial Day instead of slacking off. I knew there was a reason I've been paying you. Yes, thank you. Well, you are, thank you for, well, we thank you, sir. Thank you for being a supporter of the program.
And honestly, there was nowhere else for us to be.
Seriously, like, what am I going to do? You know, I mean, I got nothing. You know, my wife.
It's not like people invite us to picnics.
No.
We are not the picnic sort of people.
No, really. And you know what my wife is doing today? She's gardening. I mean, she's spending an entire day, like, mulching. Because she's one of those people that enjoys it. Like, she finds it really relaxing and calming. I don't. I find it to be work that would be assigned to me, which it would. So I would be at home, like, edging. And like and hearing a lot of like no, pull them out by the root, you know, or whatever, you know. And I don't want to have any part of that.
Gardening for fun is something people do who weren't forced as children to get on their hands
exactly.
and knees by a mother who kept screaming at them to keep pulling weeds.
Yes. And that really is exactly the case. So they had like she never started to garden until like 5 or 6 years ago, which is why it's fascinating to her and really enjoyable. So my whole thing is like I've got her to do that, so I don't need to. So I am I told her, that's for you garden. I'll be here making money, but you know have a good time. Let's see. What else? Okay, so we talked about I'm before the Pirates, the Pirate Party thing. That. I never got to my Hawaii thing, but I'll do that here in just a few. Let's see. And then I've got 1, 2, 3, 4 small observations, which I can do in like 30 seconds. I won't do them right now, though. I will just say this one final thing before we get to Aaron Durant, and then later I'll do some other crap. He says, not even pre-taped. No, not pre-taped. It's right here. Or did we anticipate someone congratulating us on the show not being pre-taped? Did we in fact work that into our comments just now?
I'm going to remember that for the next time, though. We do pre-tape a show. I'm going to say at some point that we're getting text messages of people congratulating us for being live.
Exactly. And then
they'll just screw with people's heads.
And then call that guy either like David or Jason, because those are like the two guys that we have. And Aaron. Those are the three names that we have like more than any other in the audience. I mean, we were just lousy with those three guys. Do you know this thing that's just sort of intriguing to me, which is between Legion of News and this show, you do this like really angry, like mommy dearest brushing of your hair. What is that about? And it's just sort of a dirt won't come out. And it's just, you know, it's a very sort of like you're picking up the potted plant and scrubbing underneath while yelling at your children kind of a thing.
I have this love-hate relationship with my hair, much as I do with all other aspects of grooming, whereas I would prefer not to deal with it all. But I have very thick hair. And I'm at the point right now where I kind of need a trim, too. It's getting a little shaggy. But I have very thick hair. And so just living life, just minding my own business, it just gets all full of knots and tangles. And so...
It's like the headphones do something to it? Or
yeah. Yeah. And just, you know, moving my head around, it just does this thing. So then I go to brush it. But there's this part of me that just sort of resents the fact that I have to take any time at all to do it. So I just do it really fast and really angrily.
No, that's my thing about shaving, too. That's why I had to move the electric shaver, because I hate shaving. I hate it with everything in me. And so I would angrily, like, swipe at my face with the blade, which worked out really badly. So no, I'm with you on that. Okay, I was just curious. I didn't know if it was like some sort of a thing.
No.
All right.
No, I have this thing where I'm a round person. I'm a short, chubby, spherical person. And so, like a lot of fat girls, I have like lots of hair. I have long hair and it's really thick. And I would cut my hair short and just cut it all off, except for the fact that I need hair to balance out the size of my head in comparison to the rest of my body. People always ask, why is it when women lose a whole lot of weight, like the first thing they do is cut their hair short? It's like, because we finally can. Because now our head won't look tiny.
Here's the other reason they do that. When women lose a whole lot of weight, they cut their hair short because it almost always means that they have just broken up with somebody or gotten a divorce. And women, in my experience, equate breakup and end of a relationship with hair. They have this whole hair is the relationship. It's like some weird Hopi Indian thing where it's like, my hair is that man. And so they have to cut it off like Samson, sort of, like to start anew.
I guess I can see. I mean, yes, you want...
Chicks totally cut their hair when they dump a guy.
Changing things radically about your
wash that man right out of your hair.
About your appearance. You know, buying new clothes or changing your shoes or getting a new hairstyle or doing whatever. I mean, that does give you a psychological sense of sort of renewal, of starting something fresh.
Yeah, I think the two, one doesn't cause the other. I think they are both caused by a third thing, which is the bust-up.
Hey, but I think with fat women, it really is the whole big head, tiny head thing.
So you have like a Captain Caveman kind of a hair thing where it just goes straight down the sides, just as long as possible. Have you heard that new Lady Gaga song where the chorus, I swear to God, is I am my hair?
No.
It's awesome. It makes no sense at all.
And by no, I mean I may have, and it just leaked back out of my ears.
I might play it later. It's retarded.
If we do have a chance later, I did want to make some observation about Lady Gaga that I meant to make like about a week and a half ago when she was on Saturday Night Live.
Right before I play I Am My Hair later.
Let's remind me of that.
I had to convince Lara that was a real song because she thought I was making it up. And I'm like, no, I Am My Hair. She's like, what do you mean? And I'm like, that's the new Lady Gaga song. She's like, get out. That was like an SNL thing or something.
Well, then there was a thing for about 10 minutes like a month ago with Will Smith's daughter, who's like 10, and she did some song about whipping her hair around. And that's what the whole song was about. I'm whipping my hair around. She's like 10.
Yeah, I got nothing.
It was idiotic. And it was actually a deal for about 15 minutes, and then it was gone.
It was a thing that we cared about. So that is all on the way, and so forth. Without further ado, where's the, there we go. Awesome. So welcome now to the Rick Emerson Radio Program from geekinthecity.com. Our good friend, Mr. Aaron Duran, with the Week in Geek. Hello, sir. How are you on this fine Memorial Day?
I am fantastic. How are you guys in that little dark cave of yours?
You know what it is?
I love it when you're all Skypey.
And it's actually nice and cool in here. It's actually the temperature. I think they may have actually kind of gotten their act together with the air conditioning. So it's
that's nice.
It is. It's actually quite nice. Even with the sun, the hideous, hateful sun, more or less visible outside. It's quite temperate or a word like that in here. I told Don this earlier that you sent me a message. You're like, hey, there's nothing going on except for, and then it was like, you primed me for the fact that it was basically just a week of uninteresting news, and so it's all like just falling out of my head already. So all I remember is there's something about Zod, and that's it. That's all I've got.
It's kind of a freaky slow week where I was even tempted to just text you and say, yeah, I got nothing. I'm going back to bed. Have a good show. But you know, powered on, found some stuff going on.
Excellent.
The thing about Zod is actually happening in Portland this Friday. It's the Court and Fatboy Midnight Movie.
Oh, okay, that's right. They're going to be doing.
They will be showing the Donner version cut Superman 2.
Excellent, yeah. That's fantastic.
Which is the vastly superior version. It has what might be my favorite scene in the entire film, being Zod with a machine gun.
Now is this the thing that existed for a long time only as like animatics or storyboards or something?
No. Like the Zod scene or just the Donner cut?
Isn't there something with one of the Superman films where it's like it doesn't really exist, but like if you watch the DVD, like you can sort of like they've assembled, like they've like jerry-rigged sort of a version of it together with like outtakes?
Yeah, kind of. That's what the Donner cut is.
All right.
There's a few because Richard Donner filmed like 85% of Superman 2 because they shot both movies pretty much simultaneously.
Right.
Superman 1 and Superman 2, and then the Selskinds fired him with like a month to go in the creation of Superman 2, and they brought in some jag-off that no one cares about. So the bulk of Superman 2 was shot. So a lot of the scenes that look kind of out of place now, the Donner cut, are from rehearsal or audition scenes during the filming of Superman and Superman 2.
Okay, that is what I'm thinking of this. So I've seen that, which is, you know, and it did, and I haven't seen like Superman 2. Whenever I saw that version, I hadn't seen Superman 2 in a while, and that one, I remember watching it and thinking, this is, you know, looks, you know, you could tell it was a little bit stitched together, but I remember thinking, like, this is really good. So that would explain why it's good, because it is his actual cut. It's his cut of the film.
Yeah, it's so much better. I mean, so many, especially, like, kind of like the geeks of our generation, hold up Superman 2 as just this fantastic, you know, film and this great kind of superhero movie. It's really not. And I know that will just get me crucified by all the nerds and fanboys out there.
Turning the earth backward at the end, yes?
Well, that's the one thing of the Donner cut, is I have a standing rule, and I will do it this Friday at the Baghdad, as I leave before the last 5 minutes of the movie.
Because, I mean, I didn't like the Superman Begins or whatever the hell the Bryan Singer one, because at the end it's like apparently he can just like lift a planet sized thing full of kryptonite if he just try hard enough. But it's like Superman 2 is, I swear to God, turning the earth backward. As though that would not, and look, I don't know a lot about science, but as though that would not fling everyone immediately into space, which it would. So I'm glad that you just sort of, you know, you eschew the final.
Yeah, it just bugs me. And there's a couple character moments that I don't. There's a lot of people out there probably haven't seen the Donner cut. So there's a scene at the end that I don't want to ruin it for people, but it's something that Superman does in his persona as Clark Kent, which is the most un-Superman action scene you could ever imagine Superman ever doing. And just as a longtime comic fan, it just grates me the wrong way and I can't watch it.
Oh, is that the scene where he rapes the puppy?
Damn, just about, Don. Yeah.
Oh, I'm sorry. We'll give
everybody a spoiler.
It's called doing it Bizarro style. Yeah.
a spoiler warning here, and then you can actually mention what it is. So for like the next 40 seconds, Aaron will be giving a spoiler for Superman starting now. So what is it you're referencing?
Here's what bugs me in Superman 2. Once he loses his powers and he gets his ass handed to him in that diner.
Yeah.
Well, in the Donner cut, after he has his powers back, he has one more thing. He's already saved the galaxy from the Kryptonian criminals. He's saved the world, but he's still pissed about getting his ass handed to him by this truck driver in this middle of nowhere truck stop.
Right.
So he goes back to this truck stop with his full Kryptonian powers and beats the crap out of the guy and walks away.
Now, see, I don't remember that. I remember him going back and I guess I remember him like going back and like maybe throwing the guy across the diner or something. But I could be remembering that wrong.
Well, yeah, I'm probably filling it up with the beat the crap thing. But
that doesn't seem like a Superman kind of thing.
Superman doesn't smack around a guy that doesn't have powers. I mean, it's Superman doesn't hold a grudge. I don't know. It just bugs me.
No, that does seem wrong. All right. Well, so that. All right.
sorry. It's part of that dumb rage that only a nerd can have over a fictional character.
Well, no, because most of them are fictional characters. I mean, most people at the movies are not, most of them are not based on reality. So it's like the idea that because it's a fictional character, it somehow like doesn't need to make sense. You know, I know I'm with you on that. And then you said, are we kind of in a slack period other than that? Is there not a lot going on this week?
Yeah, they're just kind of weird news. I mean, Peter Jackson said that Orlando Bloom is going to be back as Legolas in The Hobbit.
Ah, yes.
That's not a big deal. And there's a couple other news stories that just broke out.
That is kind of a weird deal to some fans, though, because that's an issue because there's this sort of rift between Lord of the Rings fans because Legolas was not actually in The Hobbit. But then saying that because he's an elf and he would be essentially, like eternal and eternally young, and since his father was in The Hobbit, he would have been hanging around in some of the scenes.
I guess some fans are kind of annoyed. I'm just kind of meh about it.
Yeah,
it'll be kind of cool to see him on screen. It was like Lucas throwing Chewbacca into Revenge of the Sith, so all us nerds went, sweet Chewbacca.
Well, and also, I mean, it's like, I mean, I'm not like a massive Lord of the Rings fan or whatever, but I mean, at this point, like, first of all, Lord of the Rings fans should just, the real hardcore, like, fetishistic fans, they should just stifle, as Archie Bunker would say, because, like, you could not have asked for a better adaptation of Lord of the Rings than you got from Peter Jackson. I mean, you can say maybe no movie is perfect, or there's always things that you would have liked to see done, slightly differently because of your particular take on it, but I mean, they got the best that they could ever have gotten. I mean, no one has any right to complain about that film. When you look around Hollywood and you see the dreck that they turn out on a daily basis, the fact that you got three films in a row that were solid all the way through, if not flawless, very, very good for the most part. I mean, it's not like he just turns out hack work.
Exactly. So,
and also, like, they just did that with Lord, I mean, they did crap with Lord of the Rings, too. It's like Shelob's not in not in Return of the King. So, I mean, they figured they can't have two big climactic battles, so they'll put the big hairy spider thing in the third film. And, people can just suck it. That's what they can do. They can right up.
You could have gotten another Golden Compass, so they should just be happy what he pulled off.
Seriously. People can eat it is what they can do.
And then the last thing I want to bring up, I want to drop the lightsaber story because it's really not that interesting, but something just came across. It's nerdy. It's breaking kind of nerdy geek news.
Okay.
About 6 hours ago, the PBS website was hacked to reveal that Tupac and Biggie were still alive and living in New Zealand.
I saw that. Seamus sent me that this morning, which is fantastic. And by the way,
within like 20 minutes, it had like 5,000 likes. We're like, oh my god, I knew it.
When I first saw the thing from Seamus this morning at like 4 a.m. or whatever, and it was like Tupac alive, and I was like, I always suspected. And then I clicked on it, and then I was sort of sad that it was. But then the best thing is the
group. Ain't nothing going to keep the great Machiavelli down.
The group that did it, the best part was seeing PBS themselves report the hack and actually saying, the group, which calls itself the Lulz Boat, which is awesome, that they had to actually report on the Lulz Boat as being behind something to their website. That was quite wonderful. That made my whole morning, actually.
The Lulz Boat.
Yeah. Good
times. No sides with fucking Biggie.
Excellent. You can find out more about all of this at geekinthecity.com. It is geekinthecity.com. And then when is the Court and Bobby, when is the Superman 2 thing happening?
It's the first Friday of June, so I believe it will be this coming Friday. The doors usually open at 10, so okay. You always want to get there early, though. These sell out.
Excellent. Fantastic. Aaron Durant, find out more about all he does at geekinthecity.com. That is geekinthecity.com. All right, my friend. Have a fantastic Memorial Day.
Thank you.
All right, there you go. That is Aaron Durant. Ladies and gentlemen, the Lulz Boat.
The Lulz Boat.
It's awesome. All right. Let's see. And so forth. All right. So we got that. Let's see. What else am I going to do? Oh, I'm just going to play. Let me just play a little bit of it. People are texting me now about this stupid Willow Smith thing. So I can't believe you don't know Willow Smith's "I Whip My Hair Back and Forth" thing. I don't. I missed it. And I, you know.
It was one of the quickest things that we cared about ever that came and went. Like, literally like 3 days, I think it was a thing.
And I know my memes pretty much. I mean, it's like, where was I asleep or something? Yeah. I mean, I was here in the country. I don't know what. When was it?
I don't know. Like,
was it this year?
It's been within the last year. It's been since we've been doing this. I can't remember.
Well, I mean, if it happened while I was at it, well, it's like the Rebecca Black thing happened almost entirely while I was in New York. That was the thing where I got back and like, you don't know how lucky you were. You missed the Rebecca Black thing. That happened almost entirely while I was out of town. So I'll let somebody send me the link here. I really don't want to play this. Because the thing is, if I play it now, I'm just playing a thing that everybody else has already heard a million times.
Well, let's see. The teaser for – yeah, it was like October.
Yeah.
This was in October.
I've got the link. I'll listen to it later.
So.
Let's see. Everybody's typing, please don't play it. No, I'll play it later because everybody else apparently has heard it.
Yeah.
Let me just play a little bit of this, this Lady Gaga song. And this is, it's not a bad song, by the way, just in terms of like melody and production and punch. And also, I also got to think, and this is partially Lara's theory, but I agree. I also got to think that the reason she does the song called I Am My Hair, which has just ridiculous lyrics, by the way, is that because Lara was pointing out that it's like, you know, the thing about this song is that's great is that the great thing about Lady Gaga is that she is fundamentally parody proof. Like, you can't parody Lady Gaga. There's just no way. You can't. I mean, what could you possibly do that would effectively satirize? But it's like trying to satirize Gilligan's Island.
Well, here's my Gaga thing before you play this. I did want to mention because I've sat here while you and Ryan White have talked about Lady Gaga, and you've talked about Lady Gaga with other people and stuff. And I just have had just kind of this sort of weary, sort of eye rolly, sort of yes, she wears wacky costumes, and yes, and not really, you know, and just kind of. Because there are so many pop acts that sort of come to fame on what seemed to be a really superficial basis anymore. I mean, I guess pop has always been that way, but it's just I find myself just a little weary and a little tiresome. And then I actually I think it was the Sunday or the Monday after she was on Saturday Night Live, like last week. I watched the episode of Saturday Night Live, and I started to just sort of fast forward through the Lady Gaga performance. I went, you know, no, I should really just watch it. I should just actually do it, you know, because I just keep shoving her aside.
Right.
And having an opinion about her and shoving her aside and not really exploring
it. Well, she's so omnipresent, you feel like you've seen all you need to, like, you feel like you've, it's like how I feel like I've watched Gone with the Wind, even though I haven't.
So I actually watched her on the show, And I actually put it on Facebook at the time. I said, you know, I get it now.
Yeah.
If she was just nothing but the zany costumes, there'd be no there. But she is really, really talented.
Yeah.
And really charismatic.
No, she has presence to burn.
But she also, you know, she did this whole thing. And I think she knew that that's what she was up against on Saturday Night Live, that she has her rabid followers.
Right.
And then there's all these people that just assume she's...
That it's all hype.
Yeah. And so I think because of that, she went into her Saturday Night Live thing. She started just on the piano and playing the piano and stuff, and did the whole thing. And actually, you know, was live mic'd. And I think... You know, cynically, I think went out of her way to pant into the mic a few times.
Probably.
To make sure that people realize she was singing live.
Yeah. Well, because the assumption is she's not.
Yeah, but she, you know, it's not the kind of music I'm going to get and put on my iPod and listen to, but she's good.
No, she really is.
And I really did come around on her. I get it now. I really do.
There's a lot of YouTube clips of her from early on in her career when she was just doing like live performances in small little venues where it's just her and a piano. And it's, I mean... you know, whether anybody is into it or not, I mean, it, clearly she's the real deal. I mean, she's, and
she's
you're
also
right,
she's amazingly compelling. She's just, yeah, like, you just can't not watch her.
That is the thing. She's really, really, really charismatic. And that's not a thing that you, that somebody can be, that is not a thing that can be manufactured.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, you can make up somebody to look a certain way in a photograph or in a video, but I mean, somebody on stage is either watchable or they're not. And she really, really is. So, well, I'm glad you watched that. I mean, yeah, because it's not, I mean, it's not like I sit around and listen to her stuff all the time, but I admire somebody who does that, because it's so easy to make like just bad disposable pop. I admire somebody who there's this idea that because it's pop, therefore, and because it can be shallow and enjoyable, therefore it must be shallow and enjoyable. And I have no problem with enjoy, you know, with music that is just sort of there and is unchallenging. But I like people who actually take something that, you know, and they add unexpected facets and layers to it.
Yeah, I still don't know how I feel about the whole Born This Way song, which is, because it's, on the one hand, I get that it's just a blatant bald homage to Madonna. On the other hand, though, I don't know how I feel about that.
I was talking to Laura about this last night. This is weird, actually. See, we're doing another weird mind meld thing, because Laura and I had this long conversation about Lady Gaga yesterday afternoon, because she, because at her jazzercise class, she was like on the Lady Gaga thing like way before I was, because that was like, because they used all of that like Poker Face and Let's Dance and or Just Dance and all that stuff, it, you know, all of that, you know, the, and you know, Telephone and all that the stuff off that record. But so she and I had this long conversation about Lady Gaga yesterday and about Born This Way, which is a great song. I mean, it's a really great pop song. And I said, you know, it's a great song. It's just it's unfortunate, like, A, for me as a listener, that it's hard to hear it because it's distracting how much it sounds like Madonna, whether or not it is, in fact, like melodically taken from a Madonna song, because I don't know enough about music to know that, but it certainly seems like it is. And I said it's also unfortunate for her because it was like the lead single off this new record, and yet the first thing was like, oh, it just sounds like Express Yourself.
But she does the performance, and she did it on Saturday Night Live too. When she performs the song, she wears the Madonna ponytail thing up on top. So it's very, she's trying to hammer home the fact that, yeah, it's supposed to sound like Madonna.
Well, she said that in an interview. She's like, how dumb would I be to deny that? She's like, how idiotic would it make me if I tried to just pretend, like, do it under the radar? She's the most famous pop star in history. Like, what kind of moron would I be to just, like, you know, to steal from that her and not think anybody would notice it? But anyway, so Laura and I were talking about about Born This Way and how much it sounds like Madonna. And I said that I think that Lady Gaga gets a disproportionate amount of flack for it, not because she's a female performer, but because no one really rips off Madonna. In other words, there's a million bands that sound like the Beatles. But nobody goes, well, those guys just sound like the Beatles, because like everybody sounds like the Beatles.
Yeah.
There's a million people who took from Elvis. There's a million people who took from Chuck Berry. God damn, there's a jillion people who took from Chuck Berry. But no one ever just goes, well, that guy, well, Bob Seger's just a Chuck Berry ripoff. It's because really no one has stolen from Madonna the way that Lady Gaga has. And so I think she stands out because she's the first one to do it. It'd be like if somebody came out and sounded a lot like Cyndi Lauper. I think they get a lot of flack for sounding just like Cyndi Lauper, because nobody really takes Cyndi Lauper as a big inspiration. Everybody at this point is inspired by Led Zeppelin or the Rolling Stones. I mean, Jesus, the number of bands on any classic rock station that are basically just doing what the Rolling Stones did before them is like infinite. But nobody ever gets dissed because they sound a lot like the Rolling Stones. I think it's because she is reminiscent of somebody that other artists don't ape. That would be my take on it.
Well, it's like, you know, Tom Petty. Tom Petty's based most of his sound on the Byrds.
Right.
And nobody ever really, in fact, to the point where about 10 or 15 years ago, what's his name? Roger, whatever his name, of the Byrds, actually came out with an album. And the first time I heard it on the radio, I thought it was a new Tom Petty song.
Right.
And I thought, that's weird, that sound. So, and then, you know, somebody I knew said, well, duh, Tom Petty's admitted that his biggest influence was the Byrds, and that's why he sounds the way he does.
I mean, I can't think of anybody over the last 20 years that has really taken all of their cues from Madonna. I mean, which is weird when you think about it.
Yeah.
As influential as she is, there's really nobody that tried to do a Madonna after her. I mean, she and Cyndi Lauper came out around the same time. So I can't really think of anybody that looked at Madonna and said, I'm going to do that. She seems like she's the first one. And so she gets a disproportionate amount of flack from that. But here's this song called Hair, which has just got the most ludicrous lyrics. This whole album is really 80s sounding. It's very, very like aggressive new wave. Just cool, my parents put up a fight. Uh-huh, uh-huh. And if I'm hot shot,
mama cut my hair at night. Uh-huh. In the morning, I'm short of my identity. Uh-huh. I spent mom and dad, why can't I be who I wanna be? To be. I just wanna be myself and I want you to love me for who I am. I just wanna be myself and I want you to know I am.
Wait for it. I stepped on it, but she'll say it again.
That I'll die living just as free as my hair.
Free as my hair. I mean, what does it even mean? And I know that I'm like being like Johnny Jackass by asking what it means, because it probably does. That's probably the whole point, is for me to go, what does it mean? But I am being that guy and going, what does that mean exactly?
Is it a statement about expressing one's identity through hairstyle?
I have no idea. And the thing is, even as I say this, I realize that I am just totally falling into her cunning plan. I am totally just, right? I am now, what am I? I am now the idiot DJ going, what does that mean? I am my hair. You know, and then I just say, and then I say something, I say something, you know, like, well, as opposed to, and then I would point to one of the other guys in the studio and go, as opposed to Johnny, he's his back hair. Hey-o. You know, and then like honk a horn or something. It's awesome. Here's another thing when you listen to this. Like, and Born This Way is actually even a better example of this. Let's see. So this is just a little bit of... But listen to this. The amazing thing about this record to me is not even, I mean, getting past all the Madonna stuff and all the whatever. It's like, when did pop music get so freaking loud? And I mean that in a good way. I mean, it's like, you know, you go back and listen to like... Go back and listen to, like, a Duran Duran record, which is all electronic for the most part. And you listen to a Cyndi Lauper record, even listen to Madonna records, and there's a thinness to them. You know, it's not that they're bad, but just they got a kind of a thin, sort of plasticky, sort of a shell kind of a sound. And I mean, and this just sounds like some sort of synthesized, you know, massive stormtroopers just marching through your head. I mean, record production has really, really come a long way in just the last 10 or 15 years. This to me is like, records like this is sort of the final argument against people who will carp about synthesizers not being real instruments. Because, there's a lot of things going on here. I mean, this is not like a guy just turning on a Casio keyboard and hitting the demo button. She does have a real knack for lines, too. I love that don't be a drag, just be a queen.
Yeah. I actually do really like this song.
It's a great song. Well, I mean, and let's be honest. I mean, you know, the Madonna Express Yourself. It's not like the similarity is as great as from Lady Gaga to Madonna. But you know that. But Express Yourself by Madonna sounds a lot like the Staple Singers. It has that whole Express Yourself thing going on. I mean, there's a little bit of a resemblance there. But you know, and. And also, let's be honest, you and I are like 1,000 years old, and so anybody under the age of 25, even if they recognize the similarity between this and the Madonna song, it's not like it really matters, because they didn't grow up with the Madonna song anyway, so it's not like they're not viewing it as some sort of, you know, pilfering of our generation or whatever, which is, I think, is where a lot of it comes from. The music critics now who are our age and up grew up with Madonna, and so therefore, you know, it's this It is the reflexive tendency of every generation to just malign the next generation and everything they listen to, which is a behavior that I just do everything I can to not allow to take root in myself. There's nothing more tiresome than seeing people in your own generation start to sound like aging baby boomers who hate everything that came after them. Plus, here's the thing. I'm totally a sucker for the Black Soul Sisters in the background. I mean, any song. It doesn't matter what it is. You can put it behind a Lawrence Welk performance, and it's fantastic. There you go. All right.
And I guess, yeah, we have become those guys because, I remember I really liked the Rod Stewart song, This Old Heart of Mine, when I was, like, a kid.
Right.
And I had a friend of mine who was the same age as me, but he was some kind of, like, nutcase freak who... He was one of those guys that listened to Dr. Demento extensively, just obsessively, and had, like, a collection of blues albums, like, in his bedroom. Like,
right.
One whole... He was one of those guys. And he was like, well... You know, that actually is a Isley Brothers song from the 90s. And I was like, and then he played me the original. I was like, oh, that is good.
Well, that's fantastic.
But the thing is, you know.
Well, you didn't know better.
I'm like 15 years old, so I'm like, this song is great.
Yeah, and
you know? So it's kind of, I think, this a similar sort of thing.
And I don't fault people for, you know, it's not like it's anybody's fault that they haven't heard every song that's ever been recorded. I mean, you know, and especially because, you know, with every year there's like 10,000 records put out. So, I mean, the idea that people are somehow supposed to just have this encyclopedic knowledge of music and know that they are listening to something that is a knockoff of something else or that is inspired by, especially, and I know that this sounds like, this is where I enter like old guy territory, where I start to sound like one of those douchebags in the New York Times that is trying to write about a culture he clearly doesn't understand. But I do believe this to be true, that we have entered a point in the culture where everything is so cross-fertilized and pollinated, where everything, and this is one of those things where it's like the New Yorker would totally write the thing mashup culture or something. They would call it that. But it is that. We're just that everything has started to blend with everything else. And there is, you know, all of it. I mean, here's the thing. It's weird to think that actually, I mean, that certainly speaking for myself, that I grew up in a time when it was considered, it wasn't like you couldn't do it, but it was considered uncommon for you to be It was considered a little bit suspect for you to be a fan of both rock and rap. When I was, you know, in the early days of that, you know, it was, and there was the idea that if you were going to be like a, especially if you were like a heavy metal fan, that if you were like a hard rock fan or a metal fan, that you were somehow not supposed to enjoy rap. And if, you know, and I knew a lot of guys who really glommed on to, you know, the second wave of hip hop or whatever, who felt the same way about rock, that they didn't feel like there could be any crossover, that they were just two different kinds of music and never the twain shall meet or whatever. And then, you know, and then little by little that wall kind of gets dissolved. But I mean however much that wall started to be dissolved with all of the things that VH1 references 1,000 times a week, like the Aerosmith Run DMC thing, like however much that wall was perforated, I think the wall just doesn't even exist anymore. I mean, there is no demarcation between different kinds of music and different styles at this point.
And the thing is that music has always done that. When you look at the way that, you know, that rock came from blues, which also came from country, which came from, you know, everything is... It is evolving from things that have already existed before. It's the movie thing. I always think of the fact, the thing that always comes to mind when we have conversations like this is about, movie A Fistful of Dollars. Sergio Leone based it on Yojimbo,
right,
which was based on Dashiell Hammett's Red Harvest, which was, you know, an American novel. And then American films start basing their American filmmakers start basing their styles on the spaghetti westerns and the samurai films, which of course without even really being aware that they actually got their start making movies based on American noir fiction. So you don't need to know where it came from to enjoy the end product.
Well, and you know,
but everything we and particularly now that we live in an internet based society where everything is just transferred back and forth and around the world so quickly.
Mick Jagger said this thing. He said that there was no future. There was only and in fact no present. Only recycled past, and also that's the same thing. It's like I don't. In my opinion, you don't have to understand. You don't have to know how a poultry farm works to like an omelet. I mean, you know, and also you know, if I can torture the metaphor even further, it's like you don't have to like eggs to like cookies. I mean, it is possible to like a combination of components and pre-existing parts without liking any of the parts themselves. Hey, speaking of living in a weird culture, by the way, one more thing, we should take a break here so I can urinate. But here's a weird thing that I find. This is, we really do live in just the weirdest, coolest time. Incidentally, so Seamus is actually... said something, and I think I did read something like this recently. He said music has become louder in the last 20 years intentionally. He says that you can Google articles on the subject. It has something to do with commanding attention and compensating for the audio quality and compression. A lot of it has to do with the ability that the digital recording, and especially using things like Pro Tools, allowed you to master, which is the final mastering, is like the final volume, the amplitude modulation. Mastering is when they actually press a record, or they would actually encode a CD, and mastering was where you would level out all of the various frequencies, and that was where you finally boosted the volume level, and it was a sort of a final EQ application as well. And if you listen to a mastered record versus a non-mastered record, a mastered record will sound a lot brighter, and it is a lot louder. But mastering, actually, I think because of digital production, if you go back and here's an interesting thing: you go back and listen to like a Judas Priest record from 1985. Go back and don't listen to Turbo Lover, but listen to like British Steel or something. Go back and listen to a Judas Priest record, which is heavy metal, and then take any random track off that Judas Priest record, and then put it next to anything. Well, I'll pick something that's 15 years old. Place any random Judas Priest track next to anything on the first Weezer album, and the Weezer album is like 100 times louder. And you think, well, how is that possible? And it has to do with recording techniques, and it has to do with mastering techniques. And I would not be surprised if that is done simply as some sort of an arms race to catch your attention by making everything louder than whatever came out last year.
Well, we've also gotten gotten used to a much faster tempo in music as well, too, because you listen to these two Lady Gaga songs that we just heard. I remember being like, you know, a punk rock kid, and my first listenings to the Ramones, to the Sex Pistols, it sounded almost impossibly fast.
Right, right.
And it doesn't anymore.
Right.
It really doesn't. You listen to something, and if you had played this for your average, you know, radio listener in, say, 1973.
That would have made their head explode.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, it's like it's the same thing with metal. I mean, there was I think it was our friend Rob at the did you ever watch on? I gave you a copy of Bigger Than Jesus, and did you get the version that had the documentary on it? Did I give you the actual case, like an actual?
Yeah.
It wasn't like a copy. Yeah. It was like an actual. There's at some point if you ever feel like watching it, there's Joni and I did a documentary on there to accompany that called it's called I Was a Teenage Dirtbag, and it's a 40-minute. It actually is really, 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 really good. I'm really proud of it. It's just 40 minutes of interviews with people about growing up as metal fans. And there's three set piece interviews. One of them is with Davey Nipples, and two of the others are with one is with a I think we put like Craigslist ads or something looking for people who grew up as heavy metal fans. And one is a guy who talked about growing up as an Aussie fan. And I forget the third one. But then between those, there's a lot of just like talking head interviews that we did. We set up all over town for like 2 or 3 weeks at night at bars. And we just interviewed people about heavy metal and about rock and roll. There's a whole section about Metallica there that is actually really, really, really good. But I think it was Rob who said this, that when before he even heard Metallica, he heard about Metallica. And the thing he always heard is, they play faster than Motorhead. And he was like, you're lying. There's nobody who plays faster than Motorhead. And I mean, and I heard the same thing. I'm like, well, that's impossible. That can't be done. Your hands would fall off. But I mean, even Metallica, if you go back and listen to it, it just doesn't. It has been... It is so far surpassed by everything in Zanda, which doesn't, I mean, which, and again, to be an old guy, it makes you wonder, like, what things will sound like in 30 years. I mean, I can't even imagine it. But we do live in just the weirdest time because this, you know what, I listened to a lot of this weekend while I was at home working. I was listening to, I didn't even own the game. I was actually listening to the soundtrack to L.A. Noire. Which is the new game from Rockstar from the Grand Theft Auto guys, which is out for Xbox, and I guess it's probably out for other systems as well. I think Bobby got it. In fact, I think I actually, if I remember this correctly, I think on Twitter there was this whole chain of events where you saw him going like, L.A. Noire's out today. I shouldn't get that. I can't afford it. And then later it was like, well, it looks really good. And then later in the afternoon, he was like, well, I guess if I divide the number of hours I get into the cost of the game, it's worth it. And then later he was like, I have found a pile of things to sell to purchase. And then and then he was home in like an hour, I'm playing L.A. Noire. But apparently it's just an exceptional game. It is just, it's like Grand Theft Auto, and it is a fully immersive, I don't know if that's what they call a sandbox game or not, but it's a fully immersive world, except it's 1940s Hollywood. And it's all very like, you know, it's all like very like Raymond Chandler, and just, you know, and it's like, I found myself listening all weekend long, to the L.A. Noire soundtrack, which is all, it's all original. Yeah, it's all brand new music. And it's just this, I mean, it sounds very much like, you know. You know, I'm leaning back at my desk and pouring myself a glass of breakfast when she walked in the office. And it's all this, and then occasionally there's a... And I'm assuming that this is a character in the game. Her name is Claudia Brucken, and I'm assuming that she is a wholly fictitious character created for the game. And that's when it just makes your mind fold in on itself, because you realize you are listening to music performed by someone, I mean, obviously there's a real vocalist here, for now, by a character that doesn't exist, and doesn't even exist in the way that, like, she's somebody on film. I mean, there is no actual her to that character, except for whoever the voice actor is. And that's a thing that I think we've always had in terms of animation and in terms of film, but the idea that it now is not just a film, which is a fixed and immovable piece of art that you can only watch and experience one way. It is, in fact, a fully immersive world and an experience starring people who don't actually exist in any real sense. And who exist to such a degree that you can now pick up a CD of their musical performance, which is being recorded presumably live at a club, which also does not exist. I mean, and in a piece of art that no two people will experience the same way, because it's not a linear game. I mean, it just breaks your brain. I mean, it really does. So, all right. Someone, and I will let you figure out who this is, says, I beat L.A. Noire in a single 30-hour sitting.
Yeah.
And then he notes that he's going to play it again in black and white mode, which apparently is gorgeous. She's a German heroine. German. Okay, the E is crucial here, sir. She's a German heroin-using tramp who performs at the Blue Room Club in the game. So there you go. Wow. All right. See, this is what I mean when I say the past sucks. Seriously, I didn't have any of this.
No.
I had E.T. for the 2600. Kill me.
Yeah. I was playing Wishbringer.
Wishbringer.
You walk into the... Pick up the bucket. Look under the bucket. There
Jesus.
Is something under the bucket. Tickety, tickety, tickety. Walk right. Yes, you see something to the east. Yeah.
Okay. There you go.
You're listening to the Emerson News Network.
When you came in, the air went out, and every shadow filled up with doubt. I don't know who you think you are, but before the night is through, I wanna do bad things with you. I'm the kind to sit up in his room, heart sick and eyes filled up with blue. I don't know what you've done to me, but I know this. as much is true. I wanna do bad things with you. Air went out, and all those shadows there filled up with doubt. I don't know who you think you are, but before tonight is through, I wanna do bad things with you. I wanna do real bad things with you. You've done to me, but I know this much is true. I wanna do bad things with you. I wanna do real bad things with you.
You're listening to the Emerson News Network.
And now, from the news desk, this is Dawn Taylor.
Responding to a call about a naked guy sunbathing, cops in Mishawaka, Indiana, arrived at a local park on Tuesday afternoon to discover a smiling Michael Dante Booth in the altogether. His nudity, quote, was deliberate and not a wardrobe malfunction, police concluded, according to the arrest report. Yes, they actually put that in the arrest report. A survey of the crime scene determined that Booth's shorts and underwear were several feet away on a blanket upon which he was laying on his back with his entire genitals showing, quote unquote.
His entire genitals.
His entire genitals showing.
Okay.
Nearby, officers found the book Gay Power, a Kroger brand bottle of extra virgin olive oil, two cans of Miller beer, and Marlboro cigarettes.
As long as it wasn't mineral water, Don.
Sweating all over his body, according to the U.S. report, Booth, 26, appeared to have drizzled himself with olive oil. His clothes smelled of marijuana, but no contraband was recovered by the police, who noted that the suspect was acting very unusual. Booth, who kept smiling wide-eyed at officers, told police, "I'm from New York. Can't I do this here?" He continued, "I'm a Republican, and the cigarettes pay your taxes."
So this is who is this that did this? Is it somebody notable, somebody that we care about?
No, this is just a
just
guy,
some guy
in a park in Indiana.
Okay, all right.
Who covered himself in olive oil and sunbathed naked in a public park.
Like you do. All right.
In response to those observations about the cigarettes and the being from New York and the whatnot, officers quickly detained him in cuffs and using the blanket for cover inside a police mechanical, it says. Is a police mechanical a police car?
I don't know. Is that like some sort of a steampunk thing that they whisk him into the sky with? Olive oil, is that for like a nice even all-over tan or something?
I guess so.
All right.
Yes. And that's it. That's
okay.
All there is.
There you go.
We're done with that.
By the way, apparently in L.A. Noir, and I knew that one of the guys... I knew this was true for one of the guys, but apparently a whole bunch of the actors in L.A. Noir are from Mad Men. I knew that, what's his name? Ken Cosgrove accounts. I knew he was. I think he's actually the lead. But yes, Cole Phelps, L.A. Noir's protagonist, Cole Phelps, played by Aaron Staton of Mad Men. And it's just, and I got to tell you, it's like, just to go back on the L.A. Noir thing for a second, I remember just seeing like early sort of like, not even screen tests, but just sort of, they would relieve sort of, you know, like rough cut scenes just to kind of whet people's appetites for that. And it was uncanny. I mean, a couple times in the last few months, actually, I have caught myself watching like a commercial or just looking at a frame or something and not being able to tell whether I am looking at a photograph or at a video game. And there are moments in L.A. Noir that seem like they're going to be like that. Also, the father from Fringe, Walter, apparently plays an awesome capitalist land grabber getting rich building cheap homes for returning GIs. Just FYI.
Wow.
So it's good to see they're all getting work.
So I need to get myself one of these
computers,
Xbox contraptions one of these days, don't I?
Yes. Now, I thought you already had an Xbox. Oh, no, because you were playing Left 4 Dead on your console.
Right.
All right. And it may be for the, they may have it for the actual, computer.
I had a PS2, and since pretty much gaming kind of, you know, was passing that by, and all I was using it for was Katamari, we ended up just selling it.
Yes.
I wasn't actually using it.
What did you get for that when you sold it?
Okay. Not a lot. Not much.
Was it even worth the gas it cost you to go over and give it to whoever bought it?
Well, probably. Sure. Because we had some games, too. So we made someone very happy. We sold it to somebody who had a kid and they wanted a game system.
Yes.
And, you know.
By the way, apparently no L.A. Noir for the PC.
I've already looked. It's Xbox and PS3.
Yeah, so it'll come out at some point, but apparently not anytime real soon.
I realize more and more that I need to just, you know, at some point save my pennies in a little envelope in my underwear drawer or something and put together the money. Because the thing with the Xbox is they know how awesome the Xbox is.
Yes.
The price is not coming down on the damn Xbox.
No, but at this point you might almost be, I mean, I don't know when the new one is scheduled to come out, but you might almost be advised to wait until the next iteration of that. Because like the Xbox, like the 360 was just such a leap forward from the regular Xbox. And it's like even with the 360, they've, you know, with downloadable content and some of the accessories and stuff, it really is just like, I mean, I had the original Xbox, which I loved, but the 360 was a massive leap forward. So I don't even know what the next thing, if it's going to be like the Xbox 720 or if it's going to be whatever. But
what with the popularity of the Xbox and the continuing popularity of the Xbox and their recent PR kerfuffle, you can actually get PlayStations, used PlayStations, really cheap.
Yes,
that
does not surprise me actually.
But yeah.
I'm kind of surprised that you don't have a Nintendo Wii. Actually, you strike me as a Wii kind of a
person.
The
Wii never really appealed to me. I've played with it a little bit at other people's houses, but it just never really did anything for me.
Yeah. See, and the games that I've seen for the Wii are just not. It's the games themselves that don't really appeal to me. Oh, by the way, so apparently the rumor is 2014. So you got a couple years that I could actually. So you know that's the. And plus, they might actually have the Kinect thing sort of working by then as well. So all right, here's Don Taylor.
93 people in Sweden, most of them children, have been diagnosed with narcolepsy since taking the swine flu vaccine pandemrics last winter.
Pandemrics?
Pandemrics.
That's awesome.
According to figures from the Swedish Medical Product Agency, which is the actual name is something like Läkemedelsverket. So we'll just call it the Swedish.
Pandemrics totally sounds like one of those. I mean, doesn't that completely sound like one of those like Resident Evil companies or something?
It does.
I mean, it completely sounds like some evil overlord firm in like BioShock or something.
It's something the Umbrella Corporation would manufacture.
It does. Somebody's just saying that's what would give it. That's what turns us all into zombies. It's the thing that Emma Thompson is trying to get us to take at the beginning of I Am Legend.
In 88 of the 93 cases, the agency has identified a direct correlation between the vaccine and the onset of narcolepsy, a sleep disorder causing extreme drowsiness and daytime sleep attacks. According to the Swedish Association of Persons with Neurological Disabilities, which I will hand this to you in a minute so to see if you could pronounce the actual Swedish name there, I will underline that so that you can find that. The agency is examining a further 135 cases involving children and will present its full findings later this summer. NHR announced on Friday the launch of a 250,000 kroner research grant, that's about $40,000, to facilitate studies of the relationship between Pandemrix, a drug manufactured by GlaxoSmithKline, and narcolepsy. The NHR chair said, "We are deeply concerned and have decided that things need to happen and quickly." Since August of 2010, at least 12 countries have reported cases of narcolepsy, particularly among children and adolescents, after receiving a swine flu
vaccine. Seriously, I know some kids that could use some narcolepsy. Let me tell you.
There you go. There's the name of the official agency there.
I know a lot of parents who could use with their kids having some narcolepsy. That's Neurologisk Hendik. No, I'm done. I'm sorry. I got like three syllables into this, and there's just there's no way to pronounce. This is one of those words that doesn't have any syllables, doesn't have any vowels in it. It's just like consonants and umlauts.
It has weird little circles over words and backslashes and upside down letters.
No, I got nothing. This can't be. You know, here's the thing about narcolepsy. Narcolepsy sounds awesome. I know it probably isn't awesome to have. But I think it would just be sort of, I mean, I know you don't want it while you're like driving or, you know, doing anything, but it just, I have difficulty falling asleep. And so I, in a weird way, I have this perverse envy of people who have, you know, where you just sort of go. So anyway, I just, and then you just completely sound asleep. And then, because then I think they just, and then I think they just fill you full of like amphetamines or something to keep you awake anyway. So it seems like a win-win.
Yeah. I went on a blind date once with a guy and we had lunch, and over lunch, he told me that he was narcoleptic. And I was like, really? And I started asking him questions about it, which unfortunately led him, I think, to think I was really interested in him. And I wasn't. I was just interested. I'd never actually talked to a narcoleptic before. But yeah, apparently he was just on like large quantities of amphetamines like all the time. Excellent. So he could go to work and just not. And he was like a machinist or something, too.
Oh, yeah,
which
you
made
don't
it,
want to be a narcoleptic
which made it
machinist.
Extra cool. But and then I seemed to like really sort of break his heart a little bit when I didn't want to go out with him anymore. But and I couldn't really explain to him. It's like, well, it wasn't really you that was that interesting.
Yeah.
It was the narcolepsy.
Leave the date. Leave the amphetamines. Take the whatever. So that's where that drug Provigil is for, which is one of the things that Paris Hilton got busted for having, which is apparently it's a recreational drug, but they developed it for narcoleptics, and it's just something that just like wires you to the gills, and so it of course ended up being like a club drug or something in L.A. But narcolepsy seems like I'm just fascinated by something that just turns your brain off, because really like absent a gun, I just have no ability to do that for myself.
No, Patrick is the only person I've known that's even close to that. Whereas like he just sits down, you know, we turn off the car and it's like a particularly warm day and he puts his head back and closes his eyes and he can be asleep in like 5 seconds.
See, I envy that. Just like nobody's business.
I find myself just hating him sometimes at night because it takes me a really long time to fall asleep at night because my brain winding down and like, okay, good night. And I'm laying there thinking about, you know, like why didn't they ever get off the island in Gilligan's Island and how many... What did I do with all those extra socks?
Seriously.
I need to do like, and Patrick just starts like,
and then if you're
next to me, and I want to punch him.
It's like I just started, you know, thinking about like a puppy that I wasn't allowed to keep in second grade, and then she's just weeping uncontrollably. Yeah. Oh, by the way, just a little bit of, I guess this is breaking news. Hold on a second.
Oh, good.
So I guess this didn't just happen, but this is, but like, it must have just come out on a lot of news, you know, like news sites or something, and somebody must have just done, there must have been like a torrent of stories about it or something, because like 50 people have emailed it to me in the last 5 minutes. Did you hear this thing about the Westboro Baptist Church?
Don't think so.
Protesting members...
Oh, here, yeah.
Protesting members of the controversial Westboro Baptist Church were met with an unlikely group of counter-protesters Monday in Arlington Cemetery, hours before President Barack Obama led the nation's Memorial Day observances at the Tomb of the Unknowns.
Three members of the Westboro Baptist Church were challenged by others who disagreed with them, including members of the Ku Klux Klan. The Kansas-based church has attracted nationwide attention for its angry anti-gay protests at the funerals of U.S. military members. Among those counter-protesting, 10 members of the Ku Klux Klan, the Knights of the Southern Cross, that's the Virginia branch apparently, they were cordoned off separately in a nearby area but drew little attention as they gave out small American flags, including giving flags to children, behind a banner that read POWMIA. It's the soldier, quote, that fought and died and gave them the right to free speech, said Dennis Lebonte, the self-described imperial wizard of the KKK group that said that he said he had formed several years ago. This is so great. That's fine, said Abigail Phelps, daughter of Westboro Baptist Church founder Fred Phelps. The KKK has no moral authority over everything, said Abigail Phelps. Oh, this is wonderful.
Oh, God. Now, are you looking at this on CNN's site?
No, well, it's CNN, but it's been ported over somewhere else. Okay. It's to, like, the Hindu Times or something.
There's a photograph on CNN's site with this thing of, you know, of Shirley Phelps in her, like, ridiculous red, white, and blue outfit.
Oh, is this the V for Vendetta thing?
What the hell is that?
It's the V for Vendetta mask in the crosshairs, and then it said God's view.
What does that mean? Why the V for Vendetta mask? Do they think that that's, like, a gay thing? What does that even mean?
I don't have the answer to that, actually.
I just looked at this and I saw all of their ridiculous, you know, thank God for dead soldiers. And then they got another one of those God's view things, and it's the crosshairs, and it's
God
Uncle Sam. And so it's Uncle Sam. So, like, okay, so you got, like, this America thing. But the one big one, God's view, crosshairs, the V for Vendetta mask.
God hates Alan Moore, hates him. But loathes him. It makes no sense at all. Let's see. So people like them, let me just continue. People like them say it's white power, white supremacy, Phelps said. The Bible doesn't, this is so great. This just makes my brain hurt. The Bible doesn't say anywhere that it's an abomination to be born of a certain gender or race. So now the Westboro Baptist people are bitching about the KKK being bigoted.
And she's also claiming that, she's also claiming, like, actual, correct biblical, you know, translation as well.
Lebonte insisted he is not a racist or a hate monger, but said he believes the white race is being slowly and most assuredly being denigrated. I think he means disintegrated. Members of the group declined to say whether they were armed. I think they're twisted and confused. This is wonderful. It just doesn't this seem like one of those things though where, like, this should have tripped, like, the last tumbler in the lock, and the earth should have just opened up and just consumed everyone in some sort of fiery, like, Raiders of the Lost Ark sinkhole. It's too bad.
It's like, and then they have, like, normal protesters who are, like, trying to stay between the Westboro Baptist people and the cemetery. So they're just
get out of the way.
They're sort of in the middle of a hate sandwich.
No, but you just move back and just let that situation just resolve itself. Wow. That really is a self-canceling problem. All right. Imperial Wizard needs food badly. Thank you. All right. That's wonderful. Wow. Well, there you go. So that's a little bit of quasi-breaking news there. That's fantastic. Oh, apparently, if you buy your Xbox at a police seizure or police auction, you can get those for less than you might expect, Don. Apparently, that's where the man goes in and just cleans everything out and then sells that to the public.
I never think about going to places like that to buy things.
No. Well, I always assume that's a scam. That's always one of those things you hear about in talk radio commercials where it's like, I bought me a car for $12. And it's like, and I always just figured that doesn't actually happen.
I had a friend who actually tried going to a few of those to get cars. And the problem with that is that you have actual car dealers, used car dealers who go there and they'll outbid, like, everybody because, you know, they want a cheap car, but they're willing to pay more than you are.
Right.
So,
right.
But I guess, you know, the other stuff is probably not being snapped up by shady.
There you go. So,
people.
You know, someone's crack problem, your solution.
All right. Let's do our penis watch.
Here's your penis watch for Monday, right here on the Rick Emerson radio
look
program.
At my enormous penis.
This really is the sound of freedom right here. When you wonder why America, why we fight. It is for the right to broadcast penis watches across the globe, encircling planet Earth. Here's your penis watch for Monday, Memorial Day.
A Canadian Parliament candidate named George Lepp says he's embarrassed that a photo of his penis was posted on his campaign Twitter account for about 20 minutes before it was quickly removed. Alan Sakak, let's say Sakic. Alan Sakic, communication director for the Ontario Conservatives, said the photo was inadvertently taken by Lep's BlackBerry when it was in his front pocket. The photo was posted after someone took it from the candidate for
Apparently, his definition of pocket differs from mine, because a pocket is a container inside your pants that is, a container, and not so much right next to your penis without any obscuring
material. And it's dark in there. There's no light, yes.
And also, you're in a pocket.
Right. The pictures are of a man naked from the waist down, showing a close-up of his penis and his crossed legs. Sakic said the device was operating on camera mode in his front pant pocket when it went missing. He added that Lep suspects it was taken as he was jostled by protesters outside the Dixon Road Convention Center, where the Tories met for the weekend's party's weekend convention.
What's great about that is he not only has an excuse, he immediately then, in the same sentence, has someone to blame. He has already assigned responsibility for this to someone.
Sakic said he didn't know if police were called about the stolen BlackBerry. It was an unfortunate circumstance, he said. This is pretty low and juvenile, and we don't believe it is politically motivated. Lep, a Niagara-on-the-Lake, Ontario farmer and businessman, started running last November in a battle to become the Tory candidate in the provincial riding of Niagara Falls. I don't know what a riding is, but Niagara Falls for October's election. His website credits him for organizing successful fundraisers for John Tory and Tim Hudak. Sakic said the image was first noticed by Lep's son, who administers the Twitter account, and was immediately removed.
Oh, see, that's got to be unnerving as well. If you're the son, and that's like unfolding layers of horror, where it's like, hey, there's a penis. Hey, this penis looks familiar. Why does this penis look familiar to me? Am I gay? What is wrong with me? Oh, my God. And then it's your dad.
Yeah.
And so it's just like you don't even have time to process one horror before the next one is washing over your brain.
Yeah, it's also especially embarrassing because it popped up on his Twitter account as his party, the Ontario Conservatives, were in Toronto vowing to force high-risk sex offenders and other dangerous criminals to wear GPS monitoring bracelets.
Jesus. So. We all know the story that the guy confused a public Twitter posting with a direct message and accidentally sent something to the public that was supposed to be a direct message, then blamed, quote, hackers, end quote. Because you can always blame hackers.
Yeah.
To cover up your mistake, he's not the first politician to do that and then blame hackers because they confuse. Well, it wasn't on my Twitter account. It was on the Zombie Economics Twitter account, and it was, you know, innocuous. But I got a message from, this site called buyzombie.com, which had done one of the first reviews of the book. And they sent me a message, and I wasn't on the actual Twitter website. I was using the Twitter client for Mac, and I swear to God, I thought I was sending a direct message back. And then I hadn't put anything private in there, but it was just my email address. They were like trying to get a hold of me about something. And I said, just drop me an email at this address. And Cheryl immediately messaged me, and she's like, hey, jackass, don't put out your email address like on an open Twitter feed, like you'll get all kinds of spam. And I'm like, I didn't. That was a direct message. How did you see that? And she's like, well, because it wasn't a direct message, idiot. It was like to everyone. So that is I'm reasonably down with the new technology, so I can't imagine you're some guy who's been introduced to this by your son, who's like also your campaign's media coordinator or whatever. You probably have no idea what you're doing. All you know is it's a way to to pick up skeezy chicks on the campaign trail by, of course, sending them a picture of your member. But you've just got to be careful with that.
Also, as an update, the information communications director is now saying about the whole thing about it being in the pocket when it was taken.
Mm-hmm.
He says, this is ridiculous. That wasn't actually what I said. This is obviously a misquote. I have no idea how the photo was taken.
Except that it was done by hackers who apparently, maybe they hacked into his pants.
And that he was apparently pickpocketed and they took his phone, and then someone stole his phone and then posted it to his Twitter thing.
But he didn't explain how the picture, even if that's true, how the penis picture would come to be on there.
No.
All right. Yeah, this is really you really do understand when you read stories like this why, when I was at CBS, they made us get the BlackBerry 8830, which is the one model that doesn't have a camera, because that avoids the entire thing altogether. I couldn't have posted penis pictures if I tried. My life had depended on it.
Here's the thing: if you are even remotely a famous person in any sense of the word, don't take pictures of your penis.
No,
How about you just are smart enough to not take pictures of your penis?
No, that's an ironclad rule. That really is a that is advice that is that has kept me in good stead throughout my life. That you know pictures of my penis, because I get it. Here's the thing:
you freaked out that one day when you thought you might have done it accidentally.
I know, and I was all ready to smash my phone. I was ready just to burn it, just to terminate it with extreme prejudice to get rid of that. Well, because I mean, you know,
as were we all.
I just, you know. And so much so, thank God you haven't sent any of your many, many penis pictures out over the internet. And this has only happened to me one time, to my knowledge. But I mean, it's. But I got. I only once in my life have I ever been with a lady who expressed interest in recording the evenings, and I was like, no, and also, by the way, I'm now going home because I no longer believe that anything that takes place within your house. Is going to just stay within that. This is years ago. I mean, this is back when it would have been like a thing that was like the size of a car that you would have had to, with a big red light on the front of it, probably. I don't even think it was
She was trying to Bob Crane you.
Yes, that's what I'm saying. And not in the bludgeony way, but in the, you know. But, exactly. The internet existed because I think we emailed, but I mean, there wasn't. You know, but it was like all in the 14-4 days. So I don't think it would have been.
And it would take like all day to download a dirty picture. Believe me, I know.
And so even then, when there was really no chance that it was going to be like loosed into the public, it wasn't going to go rogue, go wild.
Go viral, as the kids say.
Exactly. I mean, it was like it would have just presumably just sat in a box in her closet or whatever. I was still like, no, I'm not going to do that. And then the thing about it is, like, she asked the one time. She's like, so have you ever thought about it? and then basically filming the sexing, as we didn't call it then. And I said no, that's not a thing that I've thought about, and not a thing in which I'm interested at all, ever, under any. And I was like very, very clear, like no, and also no, because I wanted to make it absolutely clear that I was not okay with that. And in no way was that a thing that I was comfortable with, and I was not advocating or endorsing or condoning that at all. I might have actually gone forward with the evening's planned festivities had she not then followed up by asking a second time. She's like, are you sure? It'd be really hot. And I'm like, that's it. We're done. Like, there's no sex. Seriously, there's no. It's like when Lycus always talks to these idiot guys that don't want to rub rubbers. And he's like, you know, is 10 minutes worth the next 18 years of your life? Really, jackass? Like, there is no sex that is worth paying $500,000 for 18 years to send some kid of yours off to college that you know, a kid that you probably didn't want with some girl you probably don't care about. That is like my thing with it. There's no evening with no girl that is worth just like a videotape of Mike Johnson just sort of like, because then for the rest of your life, you're just like, well, I'd like to run for the Congress, but penis tape, you know? Yeah. And plus for just years of watching, watching spy films and reading Jean Le Carré novels. One can never now know if you ever could that you're like, well, here are the negatives. There are no copies of this,
yeah.
Which is a thing you'd never believe anyway.
No, that doesn't happen.
And I know enough. And let me just be honest about this. I know enough guys that have surreptitiously photographed women in various stages of undress.
Oh, really?
I've mentioned this story that it's like, and I'm not saying I'm proud of that fact, but I'm like years ago, and I will not use his name, but years ago, a friend and I were helping another friend move. And we were taking a box of stuff out of his bedroom, and there was a video camera, and this is like, again, the kind of an old school video camera that was totally had like electrical tape like over all of the all of the parts that gave off light. And we're like, hey, Mark, what's up with this video camera? And he's like, well, what do you mean? We're like, well, the red light, all the lights are taped over with electrical tape. And he's like, oh no, give that to me. I'll take. Don't you? And like my other friend, who we'll call Tim, not his real name, immediately put it together. Goes, Mark, you're videotaping women having sex without their knowledge. And he's just like, I have to go. And he literally just like grabbed the thing and like got in his car and drove away and claimed that he suddenly had got like, it was like an oil change he suddenly had to go to. Or like, I don't know, there's a sale at Penny's, you know, and he immediately had to leave. And it was just, he didn't want to discuss the camera at all. So obviously that's what he was doing. And I'm just saying that's not a thing that, yes, Rick Emerson is not okay with that.
No.
All right. People are filling the screen with lamentable stories of their attempts to download pornography in 1993 and how it would take all night to get something that ended up just being a picture of an owl or something.
Yeah, that was a sad time for porn.
Yeah, no. All right, here's Dante.
This warm Memorial Day, the nation's capital had its annual PBS 2011 Memorial Day concert. Although I would like to point out that it's not the annual PBS 2011 Memorial Day concert.
No, that's inaccurate.
Actor Joe Mantegna hosted, as he has for nearly a decade, and he says it's this concert that made him aware of reality versus show business.
Let's see. What is this?
Memorial.
Memorial. The hell did I put this? Hold on a second. The hell did my? Oh, I'm sorry. That is a piece of sound that I have to load. That'll be just one moment here. Somebody's asking me to say Jean Le Carré again. There you go.
Jean Le Carré.
Which is not his real name. That's a pen name for somebody or other. Let's see. Memorial 1. Joe Mantegna says what?
This was the Memorial Day right after 9/11. So it was such an emotional moment for me. It made me realize this is not show business anymore. This is the real deal. I'm talking about real people and real events.
Oh my God, he sounds just like Joe Mantegna.
Mantegna gives his take on what made Sunday special.
Our Constitution, our Declaration of Independence, and you understand what this country is based on. And so Memorial Day is this fitting kind of day we set aside to pay tribute to those who have had to prove that freedom isn't free.
It's a buck of five, blah, blah, blah. Hey, let me ask you this about nothing in particular. Now people...
Axe away.
People are just, now people are asking follow-up questions about the... the woman and the incident with the video camera and the whatever. Now, I never said it wasn't like it was a thing that was already happening. I think people are thinking that I was somehow that it was in progress and I was interrupting either the act itself or the videotaping thereof. No. In her defense, she did inquire about that at the top of the evening before anything sort of took place. So I was able to opt out.
Yeah. And that happens. People ask you to do things, you say no.
No, and then she asked again, clarified, and I said no. And by the way, now I'm leaving. No. So there was, to my knowledge, there was no actual taping happening. Let me ask you this: I don't get a chance to listen to Robert Wagner and Sabrina very often. But there was they did something last Thursday or last Friday. All I know is because there was the recap that they posted. It was like on this morning's on a Cascade this morning on Socket. There's the whole thing about they posted something about Warren Zevon, and they said on this morning's show, da 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 da. Plus Warren Zevon is the devil. Do you have any idea what that was about?
No.
I have to go back and listen to the show at some point. Just that intrigues me. I want to go back and... Because, Warren Zevon, he was another, like, Bob Crane guy that just had, like, a whole wall of tapes of him just giving the high hard one to, like, any chick that would come by his apartment.
Really?
Yes.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And apparently...
I don't know if I wanted to know that.
No. Apparently it fell to his son, Jordan, to sort of take care of that, too, after he was dead. It's a fascinating book, but it is apparently at Zevon's own request. It is a warts and all, very unvarnished, very... I don't even say unflattering, but it is apparently an accurate and unflinching look at his life. There's a book called I'll Sleep When I'm Dead, which his wife put together, Crystal Zevon put together. And I typically don't like oral biographies where it's just a whole series of people's recollections and interviews that are stitched together into chronological form. But it's actually really good. It's probably the best oral biography I've ever read. But apparently it was one of Zevon's last wishes that she do, because I think he'd been talking about doing an autobiography, and then when he got mesothelioma or whatever that was, and he died from, he knew he wasn't going to be able to do it. But he asked her to put together the biography once after he was dead. But his request was that it be absolutely honest and include all of the bad as well as all of the good, because he was just a bastard, just a terrible human being for long stretches of his life, and was by all accounts much better toward the end, by the time he hit middle age, but was just an awful human being in many ways. And it sort of came... And part of that had to do with the fact that he was a raging alcoholic, like nonstop, like blind drunk pretty much all the time for like 20 years. But he was like a full-on OCD freak. I mean, just like obsessive compulsive, like nobody's business. He had this whole thing about Calvin Klein gray T-shirts where... If he was in a mall, or if he was in any sort of a shopping place where they sold gray Calvin Klein just like T-shirts, he had to stop and he had to buy all of the Calvin Klein gray T-shirts that they had. And it was a specific kind of shirt. It was like a certain cut or a certain fit or whatever. But if he was there, he had to stop and buy all of their gray Calvin Klein shirts and then just take them home and put them in a drawer and never wear them. And it was actually so bad that if he was on tour, they had to keep the tour bus windows closed on the side facing, like, the town if they were on the highway. Because if he actually, like, saw, like, a Sears or a JCPenney's or a Walmart or something out the window, they would have to pull the bus in and he would have to go in and see and check the mall exhaustively to see if any of the stores sold gray Calvin Klein shirts. Because if they were there, he had to buy them and take them home and put them in a drawer. And he was that way, I guess, through his up until the end of his life. He was just incredibly obsessive compulsive. But part of that was he kept a journal every day. And so then, like, lots of his journal. And so he had these code names for all of these women he was bonking. including a woman who lived in his condo, in his big sort of apartment building, who he just referred to as porny neighbor. And it would be a lot of like, porny neighbor came over for sex today. That was awesome. Now drinking some iced tea. And, you know, and it was, and then just like a whole wall of just his exploits and adventures on preserved and videotape.
Not sure I really wanted to know all of those things.
No. He really, yes, he
kind of taints my love of Warren Zevon just a bit.
Really?
Just a tiny bit.
Yeah, see, to me, and I was sort of
I've always thought of him as kind of lovable, really, but that's just me.
I still do. I love Warren Zevon, but he seems like a lovable kind of guy, but in a way that he seems sort of like. He seemed lovable but sinister at the same time. I mean, he really did. He did always seem like a lovable sort of hateful cynic, in a strange way. So yeah. Anyway, but if anybody ever wants to read that, that is called "I'll Sleep While I'm Dead" by Crystal Zevon, and it is quite a book. Somebody's apparently he is lovable by many women, including but not limited to porny neighbor. But we live in a time now where, like, sex tapes, here's another one, sex tapes could help most people, surely, especially if the partner is hot and can turn nobodies into celebrities. See, sex tapes don't have the stigma. Well, as you said with Rob Lowe, they don't have the stigma they used to. I mean, that's the whole thing with, what's her name, the Kardashian chick with Kim Kardashian. It was just because she was, like, giving some guy golden shower on videotape. Like, that was, like, the whole, you know, like, that is the entire thing. That is the crux of her stardom. So I don't think it really, you know, and I think Pam Anderson and Tommy Lee made, you know, a little bit of money off that, and not a little bit of fame as well. So I don't think it carries quite the death knell for one's career that it might have been at some point. Let's quit talking about sex tapes now.
Okay.
Here's Don Taylor.
Let's move on to unsavory religious things with a religious nutcase watch.
Here's your religious nutcase watch for Memorial Day. That is Monday, May 30th, 2011. Don Taylor.
A Pennsylvania woman has pleaded guilty to child neglect and cruelty charges stemming from a bloody religious ritual in Paterson, Pennsylvania. Authorities say Yanitsa Kolichan made her 7-year-old daughter watch an initiation rite in which included a chicken sacrifice and then feeding the girl its heart.
Yeah.
The Record newspaper reports prosecutors said the Jamesburg, Pennsylvania resident wanted to protect her daughter in the Paolo Mayambi religion before the 33-year-old before the mother shipped out to begin Army basic training in 2007.
How much courage could you possibly get from a chicken?
I don't know. This was it was some kind of a protection ritual.
I'm just saying that, you know, I understand, yeah. You know, consuming the essence of one's enemy, but I'm saying a chicken seems to have negligible energy.
I know. The girl told the religion originated in Central Africa. The girl told a teacher that she was having nightmares, and child welfare officials were contacted. Kolichan faces up to 5 years probation when she's sentenced in June.
Yeesh. All right, so there you go. That's let's see. There you go. There's your religious nutcase watch. Somebody's noting about the Zevon thing. Many people apparently did not wish to know that about Warren Zevon. Sorry. I guess I thought that it was sort of, I don't know. I guess it's not surprising that people didn't know that, because he's I think a lot of people know the name Warren Zevon, but I guess he is a guy who's still primarily known through his music. He wasn't a celebrity as such, I think, while he was alive. I mean, yeah. His songs, especially some of his songs recorded by other people, ended up being much more famous than he was. Somebody notes shrewdly, I think, they say that that's very Lou Ashby of him. Lou Ashby was the Callum Keith Rennie character from the second season of Californication, the record producer with whom Hank Moody was living for a while. By the way, you know that in the second season, you know that that place where the Lou Ashby's mansion, where Duchovny and Ashby live, that's Rick Rubin's house.
Oh, I'm not surprised.
That is like his actual house. They're just like, Rick Rubin, can we film here? And he's like, sure, why not? And so I think Ashby himself, though, is, well, as obviously as Hank Moody is, Hank Moody and Lou Ashby are both based very heavily on Warren Zevon. Tom Kapanos has been very upfront about that. That Hank Moody is based on Charles Bukowski and also on Warren Zevon, which is why there's a Warren Zevon reference in every episode of Californication, often woven into the dialogue of the show.
Speaking of television,
yes, we should get to The Killing here in just a second. So to speak. Let's see. Let me just close all of this. I got all this stuff just stacking up over here. I got all this. I didn't even get to. Well, let me just do this. Let me do a couple of these. Before I do the brief observations, let me just say that the brief observations, as well as the recap of last night's episode of The Killing, brought to you by Squires Electric. Squires Electric at 503-252-1609. You can also find out more about them by going to squireselectric.com or by going to facebook.com/SquiresElectric. Facebook.com/SquiresElectric has unsolicited testimonials from customers, people who've actually used their services and found them to be, as we always say, found them to be efficient, found them to be, very prompt. They're on time. They get it done. They get it done right. And and you're going to end up paying less in the long haul. And, you're probably going to pay less, just in point of fact, than you thought you would. So it really, you're going to have that job done correctly by guys who know what they're doing, which doesn't mean, means you're not going to have them come back out and be fixing the job that somebody else did, or that, where your wife has got some jagoff brother, who just got out of the joint and needs work, and so she's gonna have him rewire your whole downstairs den. You don't want that. I mean, it's a bad idea. You just avoid that. But you go to squireselectric.com or facebook.com/SquiresElectric, and you can find out much about what they have done, up to and including, I swear to God, just like getting snakes out of your out of your basement, out of your den, or wrapped down the power box or whatever. If you're going to be building a house from scratch, you're going to be remodeling a house, you're going to be kind of gutting the whole thing, or you're going to be moving a business into it, or maybe you've got a business where you've been at and you're either going to be expanding or you're going to be taking your operation, moving it to some brand new place. You want to make sure that it's wired for all of your needs so you don't welcome to our new business. You turn the lights and then everything just goes dead. You want to make sure that it handles your internet needs, your electricity needs, just little things like being able to do the inner office, intercom, all of that stuff. Make sure it's wired correctly the first time so you can get on with the business of business. And it's SquiresElectric.com or Facebook.com/SquiresElectric or 503-252-1609, 503-252-1609. 09 Squires Electric. If it has to do with wires or wiring in your home or business, they can make your life easier. That is Squires Electric. All right. So before we get to the recap of last night's episode of The Killing, let me just do this. Let's see. So I should just make a couple of brief observations. I was going to save these till tomorrow, but really by tomorrow I'll have forgotten about them and I have other, there will undoubtedly be other crap piling up in my head that I got to get to. Let's see. We'll do this in no particular order. Number one. Attention every restaurant on planet Earth and your website. Quit putting your menus in PDF format. For the love of God, just make it a goddamn web page like everybody else. Let's see. Two, you're talking about the thing with Buffalo, their new slogan being Buffalo, for real? I discovered that we don't actually have a slogan as such in Portland in terms of something like, we have the city that works, but that is in fact just for the city as a bureaucratic and governmental entity and agency. And then we have, Stumptown Rosa, those are nicknames. We actually don't have a sort of a slogan designed to attract tourism. So I was thinking, Portland is awesome, and so is your mom.
Okay.
There you go. I went back and forth between awesome and great.
I'm leaning to that whole Portland built on a unicorn burial ground. I think we can keep pushing that to the point where it becomes accepted as the actual city motto.
Okay. Well, I think if we probably work, through maybe spring and summer, we could get that on the ballot this fall. Just get some of those guys on Hawthorne that seem to have nothing better to do but to pester people with Greenpeace clipboards. Instead, this unicorn burial ground. Let's see. What else? Slayer should sell their own branded cellular telephone called the Helophone. And it just rings with nothing but Slayer songs. There you go. The Helophone.
Helophone.
Mm-hmm. It amazes me there isn't something already called the Helophone. I mean, if it just, and if it just rang and if it was just like Carrie King, just, you've got a new phone call! And then
just somebody going,
yeah! And just,
that's all it is.
It just rang with just a wailing series of Dio riffs. I mean, that would be awesome. What's that? It's my Helophone. And then you would answer it and look awesome. Let's see what else. Restaurants, menus, PDF. Portland's awesome, so's your mom. Don's hair, I already said about that. Helophone, yes. Oh, also, seriously, No fooling up. Somebody's going to do the prostitute thing, or it's just going to sit. It's just going to eat at me. No pun intended. It's just going to bug me. Doesn't there seem like there's like a food cart, or you know, somebody down there that must do the gluten-free crap?
Yeah.
I mean, and they need some sort of a marketing angle. Lara was asking me last night. She said, "Well, you know, like who would possibly?" She's like, "Isn't the target audience for gluten-free stuff typically like kids or hippies?" And I said, "No. You know, here's the target audience for prostitutes, though." It is a guy who legitimately has some sort of a dietary issue, but doesn't want to look like a pussy by eating just some sort of rabbit food. He doesn't want to eat some hippie nonsense, you know, like some sort of kombucha crap. So that's the guy. It's like some guy from the Muddy River Nightmare Band, you know, that's like, you know, that just sits and just swigs beer all the time, but you know, but at the same time can't quite tolerate the gluten the way that he would like. That's a guy that eats prostitutes. So it is a way to market a product to a guy who will really only respond to some sort of edgy positioning of that product. Let's see. Well, okay, that's it. I'll do those four. We'll get to all the other stuff tomorrow. I said four, that's four. So without further ado, ladies and gentlefolk, let me remind you, by the way, that tomorrow we'll be back with, I don't know, nothing in particular. And then Wednesday, Mr. Aaron Mesh will be here. Thursday, our good friend Keelan King is going to be in the studio to talk about his upcoming record, Star Pilots Lament, which is going to be coming out next Tuesday. There'll be a listening party for that this coming Saturday at the Space Room. But he'll be in the studio Thursday to talk about Star Pilots Lament. And then Friday, Mr. Big Jim Willig with another installment of Humor Me, Comedy 101. But before we do any of that, we now do this, a recap of last night's installment of The Killing. That would be Season 1, Episode 10. Your thoughts, Dawn Taylor?
God, it's hard to figure out where to start. I'm glad Bennett Ahmed didn't die. But
did you feel like it was a cheat? I did not.
No, I
didn't. But that's the thing. See, that's the thing that The Killing avoids really, really, really fluidly, is things that seem like they would be corny but aren't, like the cliffhanger, or like the fact that they kind of hint that he's dead and then he's not. On other shows, that just seems like a big fake-out. With The Killing, though, I don't know how it is that they pull off things like that that would seem like a cheat on other shows, and with The Killing, they don't.
Yeah, and it's not like, you know, it's not like he got off unscathed.
Oh, no, he's lingering on the death's doorway.
Yeah, he's on death's doorstep.
Yeah.
And the dad turned himself in. As we find out, he was actually the one who called 911.
Right.
So, he felt apparently that this was something that he needed to do, but at the same time, he, you know, is taking complete responsibility for it. It's looking like my leaning towards Kelbo or whatever his name is.
Belko. Kelbo.
Was not correct. Belko is not the guy, although Belko is all kinds of screwed up.
Oh, my God. So, yeah, how creepy is that, his mom? The last cop wasn't as pretty as you are to what's in the holder. I mean, Jesus. I mean, and, you know, and that... And then, you know, here's the thing about that whole subplot with Belko and his creepy, crazy lingerie-wearing mom. She's like a real-life, unfunny, actually the way it would be in reality, Lucille Bluth.
Yeah.
But that whole sequence where...
He's my little man. Of course, he was here all night. He's my miracle baby. He's my little man.
She said that. But there's that whole the whole thing where... where Lyndon is just like leaning on Belko about it, just going like, "Did she bring boyfriends home? Did she make you watch?" And it's that horrible thing where it's like, you know, he's you know, certainly capable of the crime, and is skeezy, and you're rooting for the cops, and yet, you know, but you do get a glimpse into like just, you know, that sort of bare knuckles world of how brutal and manipulative the cops have to be sometimes. And you know that without hesitation, you know that that's real, that is a thing that cops actually do, where they just find some psychic weak point and they just lean on it, you know. And clearly with him, it's the mom and his whole idea of and cravings for family. So yeah, he's like full on creepy.
Yeah. His Spartan little boy bedroom. Ugh. And then the pictures of the other family and just on the ceiling above his bed.
And then nothing else in the bedroom was changed from childhood.
Yeah.
It was all exactly the same, you sense, except for the pictures of Rosie looking down at him from above the bed. And like the rest of the family, but she's like right in the middle there. So, and that was all kinds of creepy.
Yeah. Trying to think what I did want to make one mention. By the way, if you are someone who is creating, directing, putting together, if you're the prop master, say for example on a TV show, and if the script demands that someone hand someone else a maple bacon donut, have it be a goddamn maple bacon donut.
I know. I called a little bit of shenanigans on that.
You know?
Unless the bacon is somehow inside, but I didn't even see maple. It just looked like a glazed donut.
It was just a plain glazed donut.
I like to think that maybe they were shooting late and they just, you know, they had no choice. They just had to get it. But they, you know.
They just changed the line.
Yeah,
just,
I suppose.
Just dump the line.
I know.
That annoyed me.
Admittedly, we in Portland might be more sensitive to that than the rest of the country.
I guess, but it just, The kid is turning into just a proper little sociopath.
Yeah.
We have a whole lot of kids at this show that are turning into horrible, creepy little monsters, don't we?
Well, it's a great... The show does... Somebody, a listener actually sent me a thing saying that he felt like that the name of the show, The Killing, actually was worked on several levels because it is... Because the show is very much about how, you know, it in a way, it is like a much, much bleaker, less... fanciful version of The Lovely Bones, where it's that thing of like the rock in the pond causing the ripple that just cascades out, you know, and affects things in unforeseen ways. It is this one incident, which is traumatic, but still this one incident has just changed and wrecked like so many people and so many things, even beyond the immediate sphere of influence. I mean, you know, the Rosie's murder has had implications far beyond what you would have expected.
So then, and now that they've got a photo has come to light that Rosie had met our mayoral candidate guy, Daryl or Darren or whatever his name is at some point.
Darren Richmond.
Yeah. And so skeezy assistant guy says, woohoo, you know, woohoo, the guy didn't die and now you can use this and this is awesome. But then now the photo has arisen and
right.
Gwen, the campaign manager chick, seems way troubled by this. I mean, a lot troubled by this. To a point where you kind of wonder if there's why she's as worried about it as she actually is.
Here's something I wanted to ask you about this. So it's a because that whole I know that there are certain people who are not all that thrilled about the who find the political storyline sort of distracting from the regular sort of cop storyline. And I love the whole story of the mayoral race. I'm a huge fan of that.
And I'm waiting for the point where I think that it's going to have more play in her murder than it has seemed like.
Because they're keeping it around for some reason.
Yeah.
I mean, unless that itself is some sort of red herring. I mean, not that it hasn't been interesting, you know, has entertainment value. I mean, that has been compelling. But it's also possible that as compelling as it is, it ultimately doesn't have any overarching significance. I mean, the show doesn't really seem to play by any conventional rules of what is important and who... As you said, you know, with the exception of Lyndon herself, like anybody in the show could get killed. You kind of get that sense. So, but the whole thing I have of which I kind of predicted of Bennett Ahmed, who was a Power Ranger, by the way, he was the Red Power Ranger, of him turning out to be of him not being guilty, and then Richmond getting a bump out of that in the polls. I sort of saw that coming. And at the end, when Gwen is looking at that video, the shot of him with Rosie. It seems very much to me that was framed and a shot, that it was blocked out to look a lot like one of those Clinton Lewinsky clips that we saw a billion times.
No, it kind of was. Yeah.
Subliminally so. I mean, perhaps.
I think so.
Yeah, so I think that there's going to be some significance to that. I mean, obviously we know because she's staring at it, but I don't think it's an accident that it looked like the Clinton Lewinsky footage.
Yeah. And now we have the mysterious, we figured out that Adela is the ferry boat.
Yeah.
And now we've got, like, this whole Indian casino thing that's coming up.
Yeah,
so,
which is sort of, you know, which is kind of great because, I mean, I like I love the idea that it was, you know, the thing of that it was right there the whole time and it was, you know, you have the feeling that she jogs by that place all the time, too, that she was on her normal jogging route and that it wasn't a thing, you know, it was a thing that took place almost literally in her backyard. And again... It's that the show has, where we are now is like a million miles from where we started, but every step has been logical. I mean, I never feel like they are manipulating us or just, I never feel like there's this deus ex machina at work. I feel like everything has been a logical step. Although I have a question, which is like, are they ever going to bring those skeezy teen kids back, those boys?
I guess
Jasper
not, probably
and
not.
Jules or whatever from the beginning? Maybe not.
We're done with them.
So she's, because the deal is that what's her name, Rosie had a keychain from this casino. That was on the Adela or whatever, which is the ferry,
yeah.
Which is the boat. So, you know, I mean, that remains to be seen. Also, did you catch that little throwaway reference that Callum Rennie had last night, where he talked about Lyndon being institutionalized?
No, I guess I missed that.
Yeah, when he was talking about when he comes to visit her at the motel, and he says, you know, I know you well enough to know there's always going to be one more case, there's always going to be one more dead girl, there's always going to be one more loose end you got to wrap up. And he said, I am not going to go through that again of sitting in a hospital while you stare at a blank wall. And that seems like that almost certainly has to be a reference to her having some sort of breakdown.
Yeah.
Because otherwise, unless it was a reference to whoever the victim was in the last case she was obsessed with, this kid that they sort of refer to obliquely sometimes. But it sounds a lot more likely that it was she had some sort of, because that ties in with the whole thing about almost getting her kid taken away.
Yeah.
Which is strange because her husband hasn't been around for like a decade. So it seems like it would have been very difficult for her to lose custody to the husband because he's gone, the father, he's gone. So I don't know who she would have lost the custody to unless it was to the state, and that implies something big, and that would make sense given his comment last night about her in a hospital staring at a blank wall. So, you know, who knows? Boy, let's see what else. I mean, it seems like there's a billion things. Oh, and then what's her name? Michelle Forbes finding out that Stan has, like, emptied out the bank account.
Yeah.
I mean, and did you get the feeling that that was a whole separate bank account at a different bank that she didn't know existed?
It's kind of, well, I guess.
She questioned. She said,
sounded strange about, yeah.
She said, the Tilden Bank? And they said, yes, Tilden First Bank. She said, really? Like, she didn't even know they had an account there.
But she was very specific about the amount of money. So I think that might have just been an unfortunate line reading.
Maybe. So that money has obviously gone somewhere, which is, and wait, do we know where that money has gone?
No.
Or is it just that he has been hiding from her how badly business has been?
That could be it
as well.
How
badly business has been going. The business has been in the toilet. And so that he's been basically covering it by just paying it out of, you know, robbing Peter to pay Paul. So, and she is obviously stepping in also to be the sort of head of the family. Because she ordered what's-his-name Belko to, like, you know, get those guys even though Stan doesn't like them. She clearly has, like, asserted herself as the head of the family.
Well, and also Belko seems like he's up to something with those guys that he's got coming in. Because he was like, as soon as she walked in, he was like, go ahead, get out.
Right.
He didn't want her to see him talking to them.
Right.
And then now he seems really nervous and edgy and keyed up because, you know, he's has to get rid of them and do something else or something. So he seems like he's still up to something a little bit squirrely.
Well, yeah, because
it could just also be the fact that he's just like, woohoo, I finally get to be in charge of everything. You know, I'm asserting my place as the alpha male finally.
Maybe.
I don't know.
And also that, you know, it's that whole thing of he feels the instability, the threat that his surrogate family might be taken away from him, even though they don't know they're his surrogate family.
Yeah,
so
they're unaware of how important they are to him.
Jesus. I got to say, by the way, first of all, that show is so well shot and so well done. It's so beautiful. And you were the one who noted the fluid camera movement, how it's always sort of moving. And it's not like the shaky cam thing, but it's, you know, it's very, very, you know, it's just sort of constant. And it's just sort of this stealthy presence of dread. But I got to say, that shot, I get chills thinking about it. That shot of the light going out in the house behind her in the cab is creepy, like off the charts.
Yeah.
And I mean, and again, I don't know what it's like to be a cop, but you get the feeling that is how it kind of works. That, like, you just look at stuff over and over and over again, hoping that something eventually announces itself. That you go like, oh, what about that? You know, sometimes it's not there, but sometimes it is. But that shot of, like, the light going off in the back is, like, so, that was so well done and so well executed and just very, very, very unnerving.
Yeah, I've got this sort of 1-2 punch going on now of, like, creepy Swedish procedurals because last night I watched about half of, I didn't have time to finish, but I watched about half of The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo.
Right.
And then, which is a really, again, it's Swedish, so there's more, it's that same sort of deliberately paced kind of, and there's some stuff in that that's just brutal.
Yeah.
And I'm about, like, at about the halfway point of that. And then I got up this morning and watched The Killing, and it's kind of like, I'm just going to go stick my head in an oven now. It's
you can round it out with that, what is it, that, like, Wallander show or whatever?
Yeah.
The
Wallander was terrific, though. Wallander was really good, too. Hey,
somebody's asking, wasn't the $16,000 from Stan's bank account a down payment on the house he hasn't told his wife about? That's also possible, because remember, he was planning to move into that house, and he's like, well, now this isn't going to work, so it's possible, and maybe he was thinking he would pay for it out of the bank account and then fill it back up again with business, which is not coming in.
Yeah.
So it's possible that he was thinking he would replenish that, and then that's just not taking place. So
what was the deal with the guy eating the taco? Lyndon was interviewing the guy and
the cab driver,
and he was eating a taco. It just seemed really very weird and specific, and like it was like some kind of, like, they were doing some kind of a reference to something else.
I thought it was just an indication of how little, in the grand scheme of things, you know, how little Rosie or her murder mattered to the world at large. I thought, maybe I'm reading too much into it. I thought it was, you know, because you can tell he was, because he said, he's like, I pick up 40 fares a day. And she's like, well, you took her home? And he's like, if that address is home, then I took her home. That it was just, to me, that was an indication of like how, even as the murder, it's again with like the ripple in the pond, even as the murder happens and is being investigated, the world is already just like smoothing it out and life is going on. And with every day, it gets harder and harder for Holder and Linden to find out who did it because the world is like forgetting about it already. That was what I took from that. So, next week is episode. And I can tell you, really, in an entertainment pop culture way, it really has just become the highlight of my week. I mean, it really is just, it is so, I mean, as much as I love like Justified and whatever, it is so far and away like the best thing I've seen on TV in quite some time. I mean, it just leaves everything else behind. Because, you know, like, we can't go more than, like, an hour without talking about the David Simon. I should say that Homicide fans may note that the whole interrogation of Belko last night had very, very strong shades of one of the most famous Homicide episodes, which is an episode called Three Men and Adina, which is where it's Kyle Secor and Andre Brower and an actor whose name I forget, who played the Erebor, all doing this one long interrogation sequence about Adina Watson. And there was very, very much... A lot of that was present in Belko's performance last night, but it's just really good. So, but I do second what you said, that if somebody's not watching it now, they almost should wait. I mean, it's just not, you know, you might as well just give yourself like a month. I was, by the way, can I just tell you how glad I was that there was a new episode last night? Because what with the holiday, I was afraid that we were going to get like a rerun or some crap, which would have made me very sad. So I am glad that did not happen. I have to get rid of this music.
Okay, thank you.
It's bumming me out. I should say, let's see, before we wrap all this up, speaking of, and I have not read any of the books, Lars read all of them, I have not read any of the Girl with the Dragon Tattoo books, and I have not seen the original Swedish film. What did you think of that, the Fincher trailer that came out? Or did you see it?
I haven't actually seen it yet.
Oh, it's awesome. I've got it. I have it because I was afraid they were going to take it down because it's sort of a bootleg.
Yeah, I kind of decided that before I engage in anything involved in the American remake at all, I wanted to... I don't really want to bother to take the time to wade through the books. Yeah, so I've decided that I at least want to watch the movies that have been made so far.
Well, watch the... when you watch it, let me know if it's not online because... And, you know, these days you can never tell if something is a deliberate leak or a fake leak. But it's a Red Band trailer, so it seems like it's possible that it's a deliberate leak, although I know that there were a bunch of sites that got cease and desist orders for it, so... But I downloaded that just to have it. But I'll wait until you're done with it. But the trailer, if anybody hasn't seen this, it's been posted all over Twitter the last few days. The Red Band, which is sort of unrated trailer for Fincher's Girl with the Dragon Tattoo. The trailer is fantastic. It's one, and I know like dick about the books. I have zero knowledge about the books.
The movie is very, very good, but I have to admit that it's a lot more cerebral and a lot slower paced and a lot harder edged than I kind of expected, considering what big like popcorn reading those books have turned into.
That's what Lara said.
The English translation.
She kept saying that she was amazed that they were such mainstream successes because apparently the books are very dark as well. Because you know, because the and something that I did not know, but that she pointed out was that the whole naming convention of the Girl with the Dragon Tattoo is that it's totally an American thing. Because the Girl with the Dragon Tattoo, the actual title is Men Who Hate Women. That's what Larson named it. The book is in Sweden, and I think everywhere except the States, the book is called Men Who Hate Women, which they figured wasn't gonna play here. So they called it The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo, I guess just because they thought that it was interesting, but, you know, it was a good name, wouldn't turn anybody off of the books, but it was sort of compelling. And that's why they fall into the whole naming convention that way. But she said that that gives you an idea of, like, the book's tone, which, and I hear that the Swedish film is very dark and very sort of brooding. So I am reading two things. I am reading, I just finished the Patti Smith memoir, Just Kids, which is, like, exceptional. And which is apparently, I don't know if this is nationwide or just in Portland, but I know it is the biggest selling nonfiction book in Portland right now, for good reason. But I just finished that, so right now I am reading two things. I'm reading Walker's book, Darius Logan, and I'm reading the Keith Richards autobiography. And once I am done with one of those books, because I always kind of read two at once, when I'm done with either the Darius Logan book or the Keith Richards book, I'm going to start the Stieg Larsson books just because, you know,
well, maybe
they're apparently great. So
maybe I will as well, and then we can talk about them as we go along.
Well, I've got all three, so as I, you know, we can read those at some point, because I do want to get those, because apparently they are great. They are apparently very well done, and I do want to kind of get it kind of read before it just starts, you know, before Fincher's version kind of plows into my head.
I can see Fincher. Fincher's a perfect director for making a movie based on the Swedish film that I'm watching right now. It is very dark and very moody and very, very, very cerebral, very smart.
The tagline for the Fincher version is the feel bad movie of Christmas. And I have to give him props, by the way, for nothing else. I mean, the trailer is exceptional, but also doing that thing of making you care about or making you feel the emotional impact of a song that you've heard 9 jillion times. Because it's a cover version, but the song underneath the trailer is Immigrant Song, the Led Zeppelin song, which is like, you know, a thing I've heard over and over and over again. And it's like he gets points for actually, and I think it's like Trent Reznor and some chick doing it. But I mean, the idea of using such a conventional song in some ways as the trailer, it really does work. So there you go. And so forth. All right. Let's see. What are we doing here? Well, and we're ending, I guess. So happy Memorial Day, and thank you for listening. By the way, because Seamus noted this, and we kicked off. I never got to my whole thing about Hawaiians, but I'll do that tomorrow. Because he started off the day by noting the Lou Reed song Egg Cream. I will actually play that again here as we get to the close. After a brief musical interlude here, we will have an encore of today's Legion of News, followed by an encore of today's Rick Emerson radio program, and then back tomorrow at noon at Cascadia.fm. We come to you live each and every weekday from the studios of the Emerson News Network, high above the Milkpacking District in glorious Southeast Portland, Oregon. At the news desk, Don Taylor, Advance Technology is and the magic provider, Mr. Thomas Gill, executive producer, Bruce Agler. Chief of staff is Cheryl Kanakoa. So we thank you all for being out there. It is Monday, Memorial Day, May 30th, 2011, and that is The Frequency. Kenneth, as always, thank you for listening. Be safe, and we will see you all tomorrow. From Set the Twilight Reeling, this is Lou Reed and Egg Cream. We'll see you tomorrow. Bye now. A young man, no bigger than this. A chocolate egg cream was not to be missed. Some you bet chocolate syrup, seltzer water mixed with milk. Stir it up into a heady flow, tasted just like syrup. You scream, I steam, we all want egg cream. You scream, I steam. Now you can go to Junior's, Dave's on Canal Street. I think they're scans in Boston, it must be something in L.A. But Becky's on King's Highway was the egg cream of choice. Hey, if you don't believe me, go ask any other boy. Ah, you scream, I steam, we all want egg cream. Ah, you scream, I steam, we all want egg cream. PS92 was the egg cream served at Becky's. It was a fearsome brew. For 50 cents, got a shot. Chocolate bubbles up your nose. Made it easy to deal with knife fights. Kids pissing in the street. Ah, you scream, I steam. We
all want it. You scream, I scream, we all want it cream. So the next time you're in Brooklyn, please say hello for me. Trentonio's for pizza, ice cream at Alan Shirley's. But mostly you go to Becky's, sit in a booth and say hello. Have some chocolate egg cream, one stay and go. You scream, I scream, we all want egg cream. You scream, I scream, we all want egg cream. Hey, you scream, I scream, we all want egg cream. You scream, I scream, we all want egg cream.